Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
Edition of Leave It in the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, our producer, David Chin. How is everybody doing? I hope everybody's doing great. We got a good show for everybody. We're going to talk about Adnan Maris versus Joseph Adebeko. Joseph Adebeko is scheduled to be on the show a little later, I believe at 7 o'clock. And then we got Seth the Mayhem Mitchell, a heavyweight prospect from Golden Boy, that's going to be coming on Leaving the Ring and speaking to us. But other than that, man, we got a lot of other things to talk about. You got Curtis Citron coming back on ESPN. You know, you got the Maris and Adebeko fight happening at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas. A lot of exciting things. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Call in and tell us who you think is going to win Saturday night on Showtime between Adnan Maris and Joseph Adebeko. I'm going to patch in my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Doing good.
We were talking before, and you hit me with some news that kind of threw me. But I'm in a better mood now. Shedding
yeah.
in the sun.
I know.
Kind of just letting the sun hit me and put me in a better mood. But
I'm going to start calling my videos reality shows. You know what I mean?
I said last night or the middle of the night that I'm not going to get into denigrating other people's work. I'm just going to worry
right.
about my own work. And that's what I'm going to do. But, yeah, we'll talk
no.
after the show.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know what I mean? No, I don't like doing that either. I mean, because it's done to me all the time. You know, I'm always getting
dude.
People talking smack about me or saying this and that about me. And, you know, it's just too much energy. And then we got too much things to deal with. You know, we're talking
yeah.
about emerging with the UK magazine, Undisputed, you know, we're going to negotiations. We're supposed to have a meeting today, but I got really, really caught up on in life, you know, things that I got going on with my kids going back to school. But at the same time, man, watching some tape on Adnan Maris and Joseph Adebeko, because, you know, I don't know about you guys. I don't know about the fight fans. I don't even know about you, Gabe. But I kind of felt that fight lost a little bit of its steam just because the fact that when they were supposed to face each other and Joseph Adebeko came down with with an illness, so it had to be canceled, that a lot of fight fans kind of fell off the wagon. You know what I mean? They moved on to other things. But this fight is a very special fight. A bantamweight, you know, coming from the bantamweight tournament, the finals, these guys determine who's the best at bantamweight, except for Nonito Dornier, who blasted out Fernando Montiel. But this answers a lot of questions. You know what I mean?
He's the Tim Bradley of the bantamweights. You know, the guys trying to get out of their contract, sitting idly. I guess now he'll be back. But yeah, this is a for all the marbles kind of fight. I mean, it's only for two belts, but really, you know, the winner of this goes on to some really big fights. I don't think the loser, you know, depending on how he loses, is necessarily out of the picture, like not at all. But still, you know, I don't see why people just kind of fell off of it. I think maybe it's because they don't understand the injury and they're like, his back's screwed up. That means he's old, you know, that Adebeko, you know, he had that sciatica injury, that he's going to be now I'm in a good mood. I was looking out the window on the street in L.A. Now I'm in a good mood. Sorry, I got distracted. But, you know, I think that even myself, I kind of found myself, you know, I picked Adebeko to win the first time they were fighting. And then coming around, I was like, no, it's got to be Adnan. I just think he's younger, he's better, he didn't hurt his back. I think the back injury did take a lot of the luster off of it. But, you know, looking at tape like you were this week, Adebeko is still a tough fight, and if he's in great shape, and I was talking to somebody today about Adebeko that watched him work out in Vegas, watched Adnan work out, and their take was that the kid, you know, Adnan, is a little bit tight, whereas Adebeko just seems very loose, very relaxed, ready to go, and that's the kind of place that he usually needs to be in order to win. I think, you know, I just kind of went with Adebeko on Monday, but I'm kind of stubborn now. I went with Morris rather because of that injury, but I'm kind of rethinking my position again. You know, here we go again on Thursday. I'm kind of changing my mind from Monday, but it's a tough fight, man. Any way you slice it.
You know, that's the thing is that at one moment I was saying Adebeko's ring smarts and being the veteran coming up in this game and finding Darchinian, he had the perfect game plan against the Raging Bull, Vic Darchinian. And then, you know, he failed that game plan with Yanni Perez the first time they met. But he came back and he just evaluated himself and he looked deep in within himself and saw that he made mistakes. He went into that fight with Perez thinking that he was the bigger puncher and that he was going to be able to walk through Perez. But this time around in the tournament, he really watched what he was doing. He went back to becoming intelligent. And that's what sold me with him when he fought Yanni Perez, you know. But the thing is, Ander Morris has used his youth, his strength, his power, but he has ring intelligence. He has – it's very subtle, and you have to really sit there and watch some of the things that he does. But he does it fairly well, you know. When he gets close to you, he reminds himself to go to the body. He puts the pressure, but he puts it towards the right places, and that's the body, the hip, and he tries to dig in with those uppercuts, and he tries to walk down his opponents. The only thing is that what worries me about Modest is if you watch the Vic Darchinian fight, is that he never gave him angles. He kept coming forward because he felt that he was the bigger, stronger guy, knowing that Vic had to move up in weight. With Adebeko, I wouldn't advise him to do such a thing. He's going to have to give him angles. He's going to have to switch things here and there. He can't solely depend on what he did against Vic Darchinian. I don't know. I could be wrong here. Gabe, what do you think?
You know, that's the thing. You know, I look at Morris's last two fights, and well, even, you know, you go back to that Perez draw, I thought he actually won that fight. But he's kind of not struggled, but he's kind of gone even with these guys. And with Darchinian, he got knocked down. He showed a lot of grit, a lot of toughness, the ability to change up his game and to kind of box and punch. I hate to use, you know, somebody else's material, but I was reading this morning that Boxing 360 blog, and he brought up that this is almost like 30 years to Salvador Sanchez versus Azuma Nelson, which was like the last, you know, one of the, you know, the great Mexican fighters in Sanchez, who was not really like a big puncher, but he was like a puncher-boxer. Could wear you down and take you out. And, you know, Azuma Nelson was a great Agua Ghana fighter. And here we have Adebeko, who's another Agua Ghana fighter. And he actually kind of reminds me of Nelson a little bit, the way he moves, how awkward he is and strange. I thought that was kind of a weird parallel. But, you know, I think in this fight, you know, Morris is kind of a Sanchez type. He doesn't have that kind of power. He's only got, like, what, 13 knockouts? That's going to, like, straight knock you out. He's got to kind of wear you down and maybe walk you into something. But generally, he's going to have to fight, you know, all the way through, I think. And particularly with an African fighter, they're always very tough. It's hard to get him out of there. And one that's got – he's not like, you know, like your typical guy. I think of as like Ike Quarte or even Dos Quaddy. They've got that shift
right.
And come forward. And Adebeko's not like that. He's a little more shifty. He's a little more, you know, cagey and real rangy.
He's a lighter version of Azuma Nelson, you know?
I just think, you know, Morris has got a really tough fight in front of him. And I wonder, you know, because he can box and brawl, Morris, if he's got more dimensions. Or, you know, I think Adebeko can brawl a little bit too. You know, I think more of his game is boxing. To me, it's still a very, very tough fight to pick. I'm probably going to have to wait until you pick, and then I'll pick.
You're going to do what I do to you all the time. I can see that.
Exactly.
You know, that's the thing, though. You know, I mean, see, this is the thing that kind of gets underneath my skin and sometimes with fans, because they're talking about the more exploded bouts, you know, the ones with the bigger names. But these are the ones, these fights here, you know, with Morris and Adebeko are the ones that we should really take a whole lot of focus with, because the fact that you got two in their prime, Adebeko, who has the similarities, not a whole lot. He's the diet version of the professor, you know, and where Morris, I wouldn't compare him to Sanchez. The only reason is because Sanchez is the greatest Mexican fighter in my belief of all times and stuff. You know, one of my idols. But Morris comes with a lot of strength and a lot of determination. And I think that it boils down that Morris is going to have to make it into a brawl, but at the same time, an intelligent brawl with angles, hard pivoting, not staying in front of him and being careful when he throws his leading right hand, because that's what Abeko is known for. He likes to go under any straight punches. He likes to go under, then turn you, and then open up a flurry of his own. Morris, to me, he's just got to be on top of him. Conditioning is one of the big factors here in this fight. Who's got the better conditioning in this fight? Adebeko's got definitely questions because he was ill, but conditioning has not been a problem. We've seen him in some great fights. You know, we've seen him in some wars. Morris, same thing. He kind of gassed out with Vic a little bit. That's what it looked like. We don't really know entirely if he did, but that was the view that we were getting if you're watching it or if you were there live when he faced Darchinian. You know, Modest can get hurt a little bit. He does get cut and bleed. So there's a lot of factors I see just weighing on Modest, but at the same time, you just can't take away the fact that this kid, he comes to fight and he can bring it. And that's what makes this final between these two guys so special in so many ways when they step into that ring on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's gonna be unbelievable, dude. Hopefully I will be there ringside. That's the plan at this point. I think Morris, you know, it's way too early to make comparisons to a guy like Sanchez. I mean, you know, Sanchez had like, you know, 44 wins by the time he was 24. You know, he went out taking out legends like, you know, Azuma Nelson. That was his last fight. And you know, Danny Lopez and all the guys, you can go down the list. But, but in terms of, like, to me, when I think of Sanchez, he's one of my idols too. He's almost kind of the bridge to like a Ricardo Lopez. He's that kind of almost like a pure boxer Mexican. He's got the aggressive streak in him, but he also had an intelligence. I think Eric Morales is kind of like this in some regards, although he kind of would throw caution to the wind and just be very aggressive. But to me, Sanchez, I think of him as more of a boxer than a puncher. And I don't really think of him – he's not your typical Mexican fighter, I guess.
Right.
In short. And that's how I look at Morris. I don't look at him as a typical Mexican fighter. He comes in almost with an American approach of kind of being a more speedy boxer. If he has to get tough and nasty, he will do that, like he showed in the Perez fight. He just took that fight to the ropes and, like, kept it there. I haven't really seen that fully from Agbeko. I mean – that Perez fight, you know, it was kind of a brawl when he lost.
He's kind of predictable. You know what I mean?
But he was flat in that fight.
Right.
He can be. But then, you know, when he's on his game, like he was, you know, against Karchinian, where he's kind of just shifty and moving around. Like, if he's fluid and ready to go, he's going to be a puzzle to solve. But it's kind of like one puzzle to solve. Like, once you kind of figure out his rhythm, like you're saying, you know, it's not like he's repetitive, but he kind of gets into that rhythm, and that's his strength. It's not like,
right.
I haven't really seen him go, okay, I'm going to take this fight inside and become a brawler and be very successful doing that, and then I'm going to take it back outside. He's happy mid to long range. And I think Morris, you know, he may have to change up his game midway through. We'll see. I think the back end of the fight is going to be huge. You know, like you said, who does that early work? You know, who does the body work? And who's quicker, you know, to get to where they want to be and get their punches off and get out, you know? It's going to be, I mean, and that's all kind of rudimentary, but with a fight this close, I mean, it's those little things that are all going to count, you know. I think the jab, too, Steve was talking about Morris's jab in the gym, that they've worked on it, kind of making it heavier, more of a piston-like jab. So I'm looking for that, too. You know, I think that's something that when you've got somebody awkward in front of you, kind of like, you know, Hamed Barrera, you want to be more technical to counterpoint their awkwardness. You can neutralize
the jab. I was about to say that,
jab.
Too. You know,
yes,
I was about to say that. It's got to be a calculated jab. It's got to be a very good time jab, because even if it's heavy, you know, I think those are the small things that Adebeko is going to look for. And that's why I say that, in my opinion, Adebeko is kind of predictable, because what he does is he sits and waits for you to commit to something. Then he makes you slip. He'll slip the punch, and then he'll return. You know, if you watch when he fought Darchinian and then when he fought Perez the second time in the rematch in the tournament, what he did is he always walked himself back to those ropes, you know, which a lot of times trainers do not like you to do because you trap yourself. But Adebeko's game plan is for you to come forward and then commit, because then you start feeling, okay, I got him trapped. Now I can unload some punches. Now I can try to get closer and land some big bombs. And Adebeko will make you commit, and then what he'll do is just slip underneath your punches and then open up on his own. That's something that Morris has got to look for, man. It's just really, I hope his team really, really looked at it. I want to patch in some fight fans. The lines are open, 347-215-7598. You could speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gable Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. But let's patch in some fight fans and see what they think about this fight coming up. Let's get CT, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. Brother, what's on your mind?
Hey, what's on? What's going on? How you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother.
Doing good.
Yeah, I just want to talk about that fight coming up this weekend. I think it's going to be a pretty good fight. I mean, both guys are very technically sound. But, you know, dealing with their styles, I'm going to go with Abner Mares because of his, you know, he's a little bit more versatile in the ring. And I'm going with his hand speed. So, I mean, if Beckel can, you know, lower him into, like, you know, that kind of slower pace, you know, Beckel can pull it off. But as far as, like, you know, Mares can do a little bit more, you know, versatile. He can be more versatile than Beckel in the ring. So I'm going to go with Mares with a decision.
Hmm. You know, the hand speed, you're absolutely right. That hand speed is a factor. You know, but you know, I can't take it away from Marbeco. He's got some pretty decent hand speed himself, you know. And you know, the thing though with Mares is that with that hand speed, because you know what, speed is always good, but effective speed is better, you know. And Mares going in, he's got to understand that effective speed because, you know, like I said, Arbeco is a veteran. He's a smart, intelligent guy, and I think he knows he's facing a very hungry lion that finally wants to have the crown of being king of the jungle. Arbeco, you know, has that understanding that he's really put out there to be a meal for Mares to make him a superstar. But this superstar is going to be going through some scratches and some bites and some nibbles on the way of trying to get that crown. Arbeco, to me, still has an upper hand and advantages to take advantage of Mares as staying king of the hill. But like you said, the hand speed could be a major factor, but that's just not it. Mares has a lot of things in the bag that could be a major factor against Arbeco. But to me, it's still two heavy bags, two equal bags when it comes to putting the tools to work to get the things done they need to do in the ring. Gabe?
Yeah, I don't agree that Beckel needs a slow pace. I think he needs his own pace. And, you know, that could be slow, that could be fast. He's a guy that gets into his own rhythm and kind of jumps in and out, moves around, fights, you know, at his own rhythm. And I don't really ever see him go slow. I mean, he's 31. He's not ancient. For a little guy, he's kind of older, but he doesn't have a hell of a lot of fights. I think he's got less than 30 fights. So to me, you know, I think it's a matter of, and this is such a cliche, I might as well say they need to do the little things, but it comes down to the guy that fights his own fight, you know, and then is able to impose that. And, you know, I think that Beckel's got a little bit longer reach. They seem to be, you know, physically evenly matched. It's going to come down to, you know, who's able to get in that rhythm first, who's going to establish the jab first, and I think really, you know, the body work for Mares, I think particularly because that back injury, you know, it may be fine, but speaking as a guy that's had to deal with sciatica for years, but that doesn't get punched in the stomach or face for a living, you know, that thing can come back. It doesn't matter how good a shape you're in, it can come back at a moment's notice. So you kind of want to test it, man. You want to get to that body, and particularly if they get in close, I would use a lot of the forearm to the back of the neck and push his ass down. To make it Beckel have to push back against.
I was going to bring that up.
Sorry, but yeah, you know, you got to fight with Nonito Donaire for millions on the line, possibly, or other guys. I'd maybe even take a shot at that back, but that's me.
Right.
I'm dirty. Well, I'm dirty.
I also want to bring up. Do you guys know anything about, you know, the new Gotti autopsy that they found out?
You know what? We're gonna have the investigators on next week. We have them scheduled, okay. And they're gonna enlighten us and kind of bring down what they can talk about the investigation. I know there's a press conference that's going to be held in New Jersey. We're going to be trying to get out there ourselves so we can do some interviews and whatnot with the two investigators. I'm glad that it's happening. I'm glad that they're reopening the case. How much they can do about it, I don't know, because it's in Brazil, and Brazil doesn't have anything to do with the United States. They don't have to they don't have to reopen it themselves. You know?
Okay.
But, all right, CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Don't hang up, okay? Thanks for calling in. Let's patch in some other fight fans here, Gable, and want to talk about Adebeko and Modest. And you know what, though? Going back with the Gotti investigation, I am excited about that. We were trying to get him on this week, but one of the investigators couldn't do it, so we had to postpone it for next week. So stay tuned, and hopefully we get them both on, man, to talk to us about that. Arturo Gotti, you know, one of the great warriors that used to grace our HBO and Saturday nights, and one of the guys that was really undermining and making millions, but gave us tremendous, great, great, great fights when it came to stepping in the ring for us. But let's patch in Leon, who wants to talk out of Beko and Modest. What's up, brother? You're on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing?
Good, man.
I'm pretty good, man. I just had a couple questions for you. I wanted to ask you, don't you guys think that Agbeko's style is going to be kind of unorthodox for Mares? I mean, because you can't really train for somebody like Agbeko. I haven't really seen too many. I've been in a couple gyms, and I haven't really seen too many fighters that have this type of style. He's really unorthodox. And, I mean, the guy has a chin stone. I was watching that Yanni Perez fight a couple nights ago, and he was taking plus shots. And then, I mean, he barely took a blink. I mean, he didn't take a step back at all. And I also hear, I think that was Gabe I heard in the background. I was going to ask you guys what type of tactics you think he'd use, but I heard throw one to the back, and that'll probably end the fight.
Just like a nice elbow, just right down the spine. I just think, you know, the typical move, you know, everybody uses it. Tito used to use it a lot. Every fighter uses it. The full forearm to the back of the neck when they tie up in close, push him down. Floyd's a master of it. I just think, you know, anything you can do to kind of get him to use his back in a way that he doesn't want to, I would say do it. You know, I mean, why not? You know, tie him up. You know, when you're the younger man, the onus is on you to push that older guy a little bit faster, you know, make him fight a little bit faster than he wants to, make him do things that he doesn't want to do. Because the older guy, you know, he's only 31. That's really not that old. But like I was saying before, he doesn't have a hell of a lot of miles on him. But still, you know, the younger guy is kind of peeking out, you know, as a man, whereas the other guy's, you know, on the other side of the hill, past 28, kind of coming down it. You want to push that guy. You want to make him do things with his legs that he doesn't want to do and tire him out, you know, use that little bit of an edge. So especially if you know a guy's got an injury, I mean, why the hell wouldn't you focus on it, you know?
I want to ask you, because I know that they said it was an issue with, like, a sciatic nerve in his back, and I know generally it takes a while to get, you know, to actually get over that 100%. You guys really think he's 100% at this point, or do you think that he's kind of still just kind of worked through it, if, you know? But do you think he's 100% at this point?
I think he is. I've talked to people in his camp that say he is and aren't trying to sell me anything, you know. But you know, the sciatic nerve, it's a trippy injury, man. I injured myself at, like, 24, and it dogged me for the next, like, 10 years. It would come back, like, every 2 years or every year and a half, just at random moments. It'd be like picking something up, like a book, and boom, back would go out. It's one of those things that once you have it, you really got to stay on top of it. The only thing that ultimately worked for me was acupuncture, and I remember talking to him in L.A. and suggesting that to him. I don't know what treatment they used. I think it's plenty of time, and the guy was already in shape. It's kind of something else. It's a symptom of something else. So, you know, like I said, it could pop back up. You know, I'm sure he got plenty of rest and it healed up. It usually takes, you know, like 2-3 weeks for it to kind of subside, maybe 2 weeks. You know, I think the last time I had it was about 3 years ago.
But that's such an unpredictable, injury, man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's a tricky thing. The back is a tricky thing, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels cool, but then for a couple of weeks, you're still kind of like reaching for something and you can, it's not injured, but you're very aware of it.
That's why I say, you know what, you know, Leon, I don't think anybody with a back injury can ever be 100%. I mean, you can feel good in training camp, but where it counts and where it matters, it's fight night. And anything can happen, you know, pressure on the back, you know, like what Gabriel was talking about, putting the forearm on the back of the neck and pushing down. And a Beckham could, you know, resist that and push up. The smartest thing is just to go down to a knee. You know what I mean? When a guy lays on your neck, go down to the knee before. Yeah, do a little David Hay, or, you know what, do a little bit of Tito. You know, Tito did that to guys, but when guys did it to him, what he do was open up to the nuts, you know, and remind them, get off my neck, you know. So that's something there that, you know, I bet can use as a tactic. I mean, hey, you know, fight dirt with dirt.
That's what I would do, yeah, on either side, yeah, people would be
Yeah, you know, necks would be cracking and nuts would be bursting.
Exactly.
It'd be terrible.
Exactly. All right, Leon, we'll be back on hold, brother. We got a bunch of calls about this fight. Don't hang up. Just stay on hold.
All right, I'm going.
You too. Yep, exactly.
Now, I'd be just a junk, just headbutting fool, you know, that would be me. I have no talent for fighting, so I'd have to do everything else, biting.
Biting, scratching, you know. Oh, look, Superman. Remember that?
Yeah. A lot of flinches and trash talk. That would be my game, you know.
Let's patch in another fight fan. Rodrigo, ¿qué pasó, vato? You're on live right now and leaving the ring, brother. What's on your mind?
All right, so I'm going with the flow.
No party today,
I apologize. I was in the middle of a birthday party last week, and that's how much of a junkie I am. I'm in the middle of a birthday party. You know, they're in the middle of singing happy birthday, and I tell everybody, stop. Oh, I'm on leaving the ring. We walk outside, try to get to the car.
No, it's all good, man. It's all good. So, who do you got? Who do you think takes?
This is a good matchup. I mean, this is what's good about boxing. You know what I mean? You can't really pick the clear winner and feel good about it. You know what I mean? I think both guys got good chins, and I don't think they're uncrackable, but they don't have. I think either one of them has the power to knock each other out. I think whoever goes to the body, which the body, you know, if you hit it hard enough, you know what I mean. I don't care how good of a chin you are, you can slow down. I don't think either one can beat Donaire, but I think whoever hits the body, I don't know who that is. Whoever wants it more than that, I don't know. You really can't pick one. You know, it's like a lot of people going back and forth. I'm just hoping for a good fight. And so that's how I see it. Just whoever goes to the body, that's the only thing I can think of.
That's the one thing that I'm just really worried about, because, you know, when you got so much on the line and you have a equal match, you know, two guys that really, you don't know whether the styles are going to make, you know, music together, if it's going to be in harmony, where both guys come in and they're just too hesitant, you know what I mean? They don't want to engage because neither one of them want to make the mistake of falling apart or falling behind in lead or even getting caught, you know? So I'm hoping that both of these guys come out and just, you know, just don't worry about what's going to happen in the aftermath, you know? But just give the fans a good, old-fashioned boxing / brawl so that we can all stand up and cheer about and have next week to talk about on leaving the ring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think they both got the right temperaments. I mean, these guys, they know, you know, they both got that hunger. They don't really, you really see any of them when, you know, they know when to turn it on. They both got that fire. You know what I mean? So I just curious. I just can't wait for the matchup. But I think it's not as popular. I think, you know, because it's once again, it's a bantamweight, and it's so international, it's kind of hard to have a appeal, because, you know, one guy's from Africa, one guy's Mexican-American, one guy's from, Yan Perez is from Colombia, I believe, and Big Darchinian, which is same race as Mariozian. What is he?
He's
it's so international, you know what I mean? So it's kind of a
Armenian.
So it's kind of a hard sell, especially with little guys. But I think whoever gets Donaire, I was like, I just don't see anybody beating them. But I think I'm leaning more towards Modest, but it's like one of those things, you know, you can't really pick. That's why I like it. If I don't know and I can't make up my mind, it makes me more excited. But I know both guys have the right temperament to put on the show.
You know what? I got to say this, though, about Donaire here, because, you know, I've heard this already. A lot of people telling me, like, hey, man, he doesn't look like he could be beaten. I think he smokes Modest or Adbeko. The whole thing is, though, to me, is that I think a lot of us jumped a little bit too quick, you know, him knocking out Fernando Montiel. You know, I mean, I keep going back, dude, was Montiel that vicious? Was he that, you know, dominant? He wasn't. You know what I mean? I don't know. Am I wrong about that, Gabe?
No, not at all. I mean, that's a thing. You know, you look at, to me, with like the last two fights, looking at Adbeko and looking at Morris, I thought Morris survived getting through it. And it was kind of one of those fights that maybe he's going to get better for the experience, but he really had to tough his way through it. And then you look at Adbeko's, and it was like the guy was reborn. You know, everybody really fell off of him when he lost to Yanni Perez.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he bounced right back, and he looked fantastic doing it. Now, you know, also maybe that Yanni was falling off a bit, but, you know, Joseph certainly helped him fall off. So I still think the style is just really freaky. And if you talk to the Espinosas, to Frank Jr. and Sr., they'll tell you flat out. Like they, I remember even before the first fight that got canceled or postponed, they weren't, they were nervous. You could tell, they were just flat out like, this is a tough fight. Our guy, he could lose this fight. This is not one of those, we know something the public doesn't know, the champion's old or, he's actually missing a foot and we've made the fight, to catch weight. And
or a broken toe.
Or a broken toe or whatever. They were very, they saw him as a clear and present danger. And I think he still very much is. Even more so that the fight was postponed because of the, if you think about everybody, all the fight fans and the writers, their mental shift after that injury came out. Think about what that's got to do to Abner Morris. One, he already kind of peaked out in a camp. He had to take a few weeks off and then come right back and start training again for this guy. But in his mind, does he think less of Joseph Agbeko now or more or the same? There could be that mental letdown. The thing that I saw my friend that was in Vegas watching them said, was it just one guy looked tight, and that was Morris, and the other guy looked very loose and relaxed, and that was Agbeko. We'll see. I mean, that could just be temperament. Abner's kind of a quiet guy anyways. That could be perceived as tight. I don't know. But it's a 50-50 fight. I'm leaning back towards Agbeko just because I think all things being equal, I like the style. I like the Okrogana fighters, too. And I was a big Azuma Nelson fan. But, I won't make my pick till we get to the fight schedule. I'm not done thinking about it.
Rob Riegel, did you?
I might even change when I get to Vegas.
Rob, did you give us your pick, man? I can't remember.
I'm leaning towards Mahdi's, but I really haven't seen too much of Agbeko. But it's one of those fights you're not really too sure. You know what I mean? But they both have the right temperaments. I think they're both gonna bring it. But I just wanted to bring up one more thing. We take up too many of your time. I know I talked too much. Are y'all going to do any coverage of because I know that Born and Bred documentary they've been working on for a couple years
is being released,
I think, next week. I already ordered my copy. I don't know if they're going to send it right away or going to wait. They've got to wait a while. Do y'all have anyone info on it? Because I've seen the clips of it. It looks like it's going to be a real good film.
I've been waiting for that film for, 3-4 years? We had director and producer on Leaving the Ring when it had been completed, but they were waiting on HBO to do some sign off because of the footage that they used. We'll probably invite them to come back on so we could talk a little bit more about it. But we were invited as well to go to the premiere, showing. We just couldn't make it, man. There was just so many things happening all at once, so we couldn't make it. But information about it, bro, not a whole lot. I think what as most as we've gotten is off that trailer, and that's about it. I don't know, Gabe. Have you gotten any more information about that film?
Yeah, I think they're doing a premiere of it in a couple of weeks here.
It already passed.
Oh, wow.
They did it the day of the Canelo. No, not the Canelo. The, Josecito and Vargas during that. I even said, the thing was that I wrote back to the guy because he had asked if we were going to be there. I said, man, dude, bad timing because Jesse Vargas and Josecito Lopez and Eric Morales are having their press conference in L.A. You know what I mean? It just got drowned out, by that. I don't think anybody covered it, to tell you the truth. It's kind of sad because, like you're saying, Rob, I mean, dude, I've been waiting for that documentary too.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, here it is.
Really good.
Yeah, well, they're going to do a week-long run. They premiered it back on August 3rd, but it was more like a press screening. August 3rd on Wednesday. Yeah, that was I was baking in the sun in downtown L.A. At the Golden Boy thing for the first of. That was when I was going from 154 down to 147.
Right.
Now almost to 140 after this week's press conference. But they're actually going to have a week-long run. From August 19th to August 25th at the L.A.'s Downtown Independent Theater and also with New York's Quad Cinema. I don't know where that is, but so you can look up the Downtown Independent.
It's next to the Subway. Subway sandwiches.
Yeah. There you go. I'm all over it. It's at 251 South Main Street, Los Angeles, downtown 90012. Check your local listings for that. I want to go down there and check it out, though.
I do,
really
too.
I'm interested in it. Yeah, it's more like a boxing hoop dreams,
Exactly. And the Molina brothers, you know, are all, they're pros now. So it's a great storyline. I mean, if they keep continually being successful, that documentary should do some justice for the two twins, you know. Hey, Rob, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Don't hang up, though, okay?
I appreciate it.
Let's pass in some other fight fans. Let's see. Let's get oh, you know what? And after us talking about, you know, Adner Morris and Joseph Abeko, I want to talk a little bit about Chad Dawson and Bernard Hopkins, man. Talk a little bit about that fight. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to have Seth Mayhem Mitchell call in about 6 o'clock. Talk to us about his fight happening in San Jose, the HB Pavilion, on the undercard of Robert the Ghost Guerrero versus Marcos Medina. But let's patch in Carcinio. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, this fight, man. I'm glad to be here. But, man, this fight here got me. I'm like everybody else. I'm like, Dave, this fight is so close, but I'm surrounded by people that are telling me this, like, Morris is going to dominate. And I'm like,
really?
Wow. I'm like, yeah, it's a shock because I'm like, wow, Beckham.
I think it's more nationalism, though. You know what I mean? I think it's more nationalism for some reason, because I've got a lot of you know, Mexican Americans that are, and even Mexicans are just telling me, like, he's going to dominate. But I'm like, bro, this is Arbeco. This is an African dude that's going to come and bring it. And I keep saying it over and over. He's the diet version of the professor. This guy's no walk in the park. You know, he's definitely going to bring it to Morris. I mean, you know, with Victor Chinin, who was, you know, really in a transformation of changing his style. So when he fought Morris, he wasn't that raging bull. He was more of a aging bull, you know, going backwards when Morris was going forward, you know. But Arbeco and my, you know, Gable keeps mentioning this, he's, you know, people keep thinking he's old. He's not that old. You know, Arbeco would be inviting for you to keep coming forward because he does more, he does better performance when you're aggressive. He does better performance when he can outthink you because you're on a one-track mode, and that's just knock him out. So let me ask you, now that you got everybody telling you who they think is going to be dominant in winning, are you falling into that? Are you riding down that wagon, or are you like, nah, man, I'm not going to get on that. I'm going to wait for the next bus to come, and I'll jump on that one.
Oh, I was already on that bus. Everybody, yo, you guys know I'm stubborn anyway. I don't want to stop making this decision.
So you're playing Morris, huh?
I think Morris,
I think it is
close decision just because he throws threes and fours. Abeko pretty much throws one and two and try to catch you. But Morris seems to warm up as the fight go along. And he throws threes and fours. And he throws a lot of body shots. And that's what I think will be the difference in the fight, because later in the fight, Abeko, whether he plays or so, but he drops his hands really low and throw a lot of wide shots late. But early on, you know, he throws great counters, especially with his sneaky right hand he throws in. But I think as the fight goes on, those threes and fours and the activity level and the pressure of Morris and those body shots just start to get to Abeko.
I think it's just a matter of groupthink. You know, social media and Twitter, which I think has been completely bastardized for the actual reason, you know, that it was created. You look at the way people think. They all kind of, you know, one person will throw out an idea, and everybody else kind of jumps on that bandwagon. And also, I think because the fighters are so accessible through Twitter, through Facebook, that
right.
We think of them as friends, and it's hard to pick against them. And if you look at their think of it as two political candidates. Abeko has kind of disappeared. You know, he had the injury. Nobody really knew anything about him before anyways. Kind of disappears to go back to his training camp. Meanwhile, Morris is in L.A. He's on Twitter. He's on Facebook. People interact with him. They tend to like him. He's a very likable young guy. And so they kind of go with him. And you know, the kind of unknown black guy, you know, from Africa, no less, you know, that he doesn't really – we'll get to hear from him tonight, which I'm really excited about. But, you know, he's not really out there. He's not really talking to the fans. I don't really know any fans of him other than people from, you know, from Ghana or maybe people that know him back in New York. In a sense, Abner's got everything on his side. He's a good-looking, younger fighter. That's always easy to root for over a guy that you don't quite know who's in his 30s who just had a back injury. I think everybody kind of just went into groupthink mode and also, in a sense, made Abner into something that he really isn't. He's not a killer. He's a killer in the sense that he'll go in there and he's got a lot of dog in him in a fight.
Right.
He's not a knockout artist.
That's the thing.
It's going to be tough, regardless of how many punches he throws and what sequence or combination. Beko is a very difficult style. He's not easy to hit. And when he's on his game, it's really hard to get on yours.
When he's on his game, he displays a beauty of boxing skills that there's just no denying what the guy can do, man. You know?
Very original.
I don't know.
Very original in his style. And guys like that are hard to deal with. Because like you're saying, you know, the guy was saying, like, what sparring partner do you get to be Joseph Agbeko? It's like trying to get a guy to be Victor Oshinian. You know, guys that are originals, I love watching that. Because they've got their own natural rhythm, their own natural way of being, which is really what fighting is all about, is expressing yourself through, you know, turning your body into a weapon, you know, expressing yourself through violence. But really the key is a lot like what Floyd Mayweather has. You really see the real essence of who that person is when they get in the ring. Forget all the bullshit outside the ring. When they get in the ring, they are themselves. And I think Abner is still a guy that's finding himself. I think Beko, at his best, knows exactly who he is. And that's very key in this.
That's
right.
Great
and
way.
I was talking to Efren Esquivas Jr., the one that trains out of Wildcard, and they used him for a preparation for Beko. And like he was saying, Mares, while he was there, he's like, he couldn't deal with his size, and he's just naturally too big for Mares. So he said they eventually ended up sending me home because he's like, there was nothing they really could do with me. He said, I was able to take the punches and keep coming forward, but I was just too big for Mares.
Hmm.
So, and I was like, wow. And I'm like, Beko is pretty much your size. And, you know, he fights at 122. So I was saying, I'm like, wow, is this? I was like, Beko comes in the ring pretty solid weight. So I don't know how he's throwing punches, because Victor Chinian punches didn't even have any effect on Beko.
Oh, it did have effect. It did. I mean, he rocked Morris in their fight. I mean,
I'm saying that when Darchinian hit Beko could take the punches.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No,
but
no.
Morris couldn't. I mean, it was affecting Mares. His punches had an effect on Mares, but that's what I was saying. Like, Beko seems to be more solid at a heavier weight, and he's able to take more punches. I don't know if Mares' will would get broken if he can't break down Beko. So
I don't think it will.
This
I mean,
fight
when
could
he
go either way.
When he fought Perez, you know, that was a back-and-forth war. A guy at that – look, a guy that would only had 20 fights at that time would either shell up or show up. And Morris definitely showed up, and that's why I think, too, not just because of the Twitter and the Facebook and being a nice guy and having a smile and being, having the character that people are attracted to, the guy does bring where it really counts, where the character that we are all attracted to as fight fans, and that's what Mares brings. And he showed it with Perez. He showed it with Victor Chinian. I don't think there's anything of him finding within himself in the ring on Saturday night at the Hard Rock Casino of him finding out if he's a fighter. He is a fighter. But I agree with Gabriel where he says – finding out exactly what kind of a fighter he's going to be, what style is he really adopting, and where it's going to work for him, truly in a fight. Carcino, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother, because we got tons and tons of calls today. Everybody wants to talk about this fight, bro. Don't hang up. Stay on hold, okay? You know, and you're absolutely right, Gabe. When it comes to people being able to have access to their fighters, being able to be introduced to a fighter through the social networks, people are really easy and quick to forget that these are not your friends. You still got to pick. You still got to be realistic about these particular fights. You got to be realistic about these fighters getting into that ring. And that's why, to me, it's not a tough decision. You know, we know Mares. He was a good guy. He's came on the show plenty of times. But we just can't overlook the fact that he's in a very, very tough fight where it might not be winnable for him on Saturday night. And that's why I'm such on the fence right now of who I'm going to pick. Do you pick against a guy that's shown that he's been able to weather the storm and be smart and intelligent, a guy that was written off after his loss to Perez and came back and redeemed himself because he went back to what worked for him, worked for him when he faced Darchinian, or do you go with a guy that's, you know, still trying to find exactly where his place is at, and who's hungry and is showing the determination and youth, you know, from himself and his boxing skills? I don't know, you know, tough thing here to pick, man. I'm still not sure about it. At all.
Yeah, well, you're still going to pick first this week, but
yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's a tough one, man. I mean, you know, I kind of get not forced, but you know, on Mondays I always got to pick the fight on the next round because that's what we do.
Right.
But you know, I kind of fell right into that. Like, you know what? And it really was to me the back injury. It was like I didn't really revisit tape, you know, going into it, because I mean, Steve and I both were kind of joking, like, we've done this show before, you know, the fight just didn't happen. Now here we are breaking down the fight again. And, you know, I felt very prepared to do that, but it was weird that I just kind of flipped my pick based on that back. And as the week's gone on and the more I've had the chance to see Ekbeko and hear stuff from people in his camp, it's kind of made me rethink myself and kind of go, well, maybe you were right the first time. You know, I like Abner a lot. You know, I think he's a very good fighter. But there's something about Ekbeko that I really like. And I think he went through that period where, you know, he won his title. You know, he's defended it a few times. And then he lost it to Perez. And I think he was flat that night. Maybe he took Perez, you know, looked at the style and went, this is going to be easy. This guy doesn't hit very hard. And all he does is throw a bunch of punches. I should be able to handle him. And, you know, we saw that an out of shape or kind of flat version of himself, he wasn't able to do that. But when he was on his game, he took Perez apart, in my opinion. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he really set the table for, I think, Vic Darchinian to look very good against. And Vic,
and you know,
all credit to him, but, you know, Yanni just fell all apart after that.
And you know what? Perez, I know you even mentioned yourself that Ekbeko helped him out, you know, fall out of his prime a little bit. You know, he we saw the lasso what Perez was able to produce when he fought Ekbeko the second time. But I saw the same Perez that faced Ekbeko the first time come forward, put a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. and try to throw a lot of punches. He tried to use the exact same game plan that worked for him the first time around. It was Ekbeko that really went back and re-looked at the tape. It was Ekbeko that went back and revisit that night and said, you know what, I fought the wrong fight. I mean, I remember that press conference and sitting there and asking him, because he had keep repeating it over and over and over, I'm going to knock out Yanni Perez. I'm going to knock him out, because he was such an ultra high of doing what he did to Vic Darchinian that I asked him, I said, is this the right mind frame to have, is knockout, because that tends to make fighters just get stuck on that. And he was like, oh, no, don't worry about it. I'm going to knock him out. I'm not worried about it. And then we saw the effect. We saw the aftermath of what happened when you get stuck in believing that you're a puncher and you have one knockout power. You know, Ekbeko doesn't have that one punch knockout power. He's a guy that really needs to use his intelligence and skills in that ring. You know, fight fans, want to call in 347-215-7598. We still got 15 minutes in the time frame before Seth Mayhem Mitchell calls in and talks to us a little bit here. But let's pass in some other fight fans here. Let's see. George Jimenez wants to talk Bernard Hopkins and Dawson. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving Ring.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. Hey, wait. Is this George, our photographer?
Of course. Who else?
Oh, órale, ¿qué pasó, vato?
Dímelo, pocho.
What's going on, brother? I mean, George, are you coming on to put everybody asleep about the Hopkins and Dawson, bro?
Nah, I wanted to talk about Gabe Montoya's favorite fighter, Chad Dawson. I know he loves Dawson.
Wow, that put it all on me. Actually, yeah. You know, I got to say, I'm not saying I like Chad Dawson in this fight, but I don't dislike him in this fight. You know, I think he's that was a double negative. But he it's interesting, man. I was kind of watching him all through the press conference this week here in L.A. He's such a strange guy. And I even asked him, I said, dude, are you always like this? Have you always been this way? It doesn't matter if they're announcing him before the fight or announcing him as the winner. He has the same damn expression on his face the whole time, even throughout the fight. Things are going wrong. It's just poker face. And I was watching him with Hopkins, and it was like Hopkins wanted to get in his head. He wanted to trash talk with him.
And Dawson just seemed like, dude, can we just take the picture now? Like, let's just do that. You know, he kind of talked back to him. He didn't back off. He didn't act scared or anything, but he was just kind of the same thing, just kind of even keel. And I wonder, like, if Hopkins can actually get in his head. I mean, you know, in the ring is a whole different animal, but is Chad just blank enough or boring enough to not be affected by Hopkins? That's what I kind of wonder. It's, he might just have the perfect mental makeup to be unflappable in this fight. We'll see. I mean, Hopkins tends to think that he's going to fold under pressure, that he tends to do that. I'm not sure I agree yet.
I'm not sure either. I don't know. I don't
know. To Dawson. No.
What do you think, George? What's your take about this, man? Who are you picking on that fight?
Well, I'm picking Dawson just for the the simple reason that Hopkins struggles against southpaws, and this is probably going to be similar to the fight with Jermaine Taylor. Even though that fight was closer, I still think that Hopkins is gonna bring it like he did against Pascal. But Dawson is a totally different animal, and the reason that I think is my own opinion that why Dawson has looked boring in the past is that he is really bored in there. I mean, he hasn't really had any good competition in the light heavyweight division. I mean, he had a great fight against against Thomas Adamek, a fight where he was knocked down and everything. That was a good fight. That was exciting. But after that, there was really nobody that gave him a tough fight, who did give him a tough fight in the first fight. But the second fight, I mean, he outboxed him. He just outworked him. And you got to give him credit for that. I mean, look at what Glenn Johnson has done after that fight.
Yeah, I mean, my thing with Chad Dawson, and I don't know if you guys remember this, is that, you know, a lot of people were kind of disappointed in his last fight, saying that, you know, he's boring, he didn't do this. And I was saying, I thought he was doing fantastic. I actually was very entertained. I just thought that Stewart messed him up in those mid-rounds by telling him, that basically told me how to pick it up, where Chad, to me, kind of fell into that Arbeco mode when Arbeco fought Perez, looking for that one big change, you know, that one big punch that's going to change everything. You know, I think if Chad goes into this fight with Bernard Hopkins and just be Chad, stop trying to change who you are. Just be Chad. Don't try to be bad. Just be Dawson against Hopkins. I think he has more of a chance of shutting out B-Hop, you know, and actually giving B-Hop a better fight than what Jermaine Taylor did in both of those fights that they had when they had faced each other. I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but you know, there was a reason why Hopkins wasn't really interested in fighting Dawson in the past, you know, and in the future here. He looks like now he wants to fight. And, you know, fight fans have accused of Hopkins being a cherry picker, you know what I mean? Older in stage, but now calling him like this guy's only picking particular fights when he sees certain advantages. And, you know, I'm starting to look at that and go, you know what, you're kind of right. You're absolutely right. There are things that Hopkins does, and, you know, why didn't he go after Chad Dawson in the beginning? I don't know.
Well, Chad Dawson was pretty straight up about it. Like, because I didn't look good in my last fight. That's how I got this fight.
Right.
Although it's kind of, I don't agree with that, because there was a deal in place for him to fight the winner of that fight, you know. So I think maybe Hopkins could have explored options and gotten out of it. I remember hearing Richard Schaefer was already looking for ways to get out of the contract right after the fight, because, you know, there was a lot of negative backlash about Chad's, you know, performance. That's why George is making the joke about me and Chad, you know, his favorite fighter or whatever. But I think there's some merit to that. I think they're kind of getting Chad at the right time. And Hopkins is a guy that's all about control and really all about consistency.
Exactly.
You know, he's had the same team for the longest time, except, you know, when he kicked Louis Fisher to the curb unceremoniously and moved on to Nazim Richardson. But beyond that, he's had the same camp. And, you know, Nazim's been there all along as well. Whereas Dawson is in a transition period. He even said, like, look, it wasn't a hell of a lot of time to work with Manny Stewart, you know, and then you're in your first fight with this guy, you're getting used to his voice in between rounds, and he's making adjustments. You're not used to, you know, trusting him with those adjustments and all that. You're not quite, maybe he misinterpreted Manny. And like you said, he started looking for that one big shot rather than, you know, you got to step it up. Okay, just start letting my hands go a little bit more and being more aggressive with combinations. Whatever the case, he's still got to transition with Manny. He likes working with him, but you know, it's gonna take a period of time. So Hopkins is getting him just at the right time. He's kind of unsure of himself. He's only a fight removed from a loss, and his last fight didn't look great. He's with a new trainer. Everything's in flux for him, and he really needs to win or go home. Whereas
right.
Hopkins, you know, he's 87 years old. He has nothing to lose in this fight. You know, he's going to be the old guy. If he loses, he's the old guy. You know,
right.
If
right,
he wins,
right.
He's the greatest fighter of all time. You know, and it was interesting, and I don't want to. Well, I guess I'm kind of starting something, but we're waiting around in the whole, the round table talking to Hopkins. And Kelly Swanson, his publicist, is kind of pacing back and forth, you know, monitoring all this to make sure our questions are all on the up and up. And I waited and waited and had to wait through this one reporter who was asking Hopkins, not really a reporter, but a guy with a camera, asking Hopkins about Mayweather-Ortiz. Waited through that, and then I came with my first question. I had three. And the first one was, what do you think about PEDs in boxing? And,
uh-huh.
and what is your stance on better testing? Hopkins did answer and said, whatever's good for boxing, I'm for that. But immediately the publicist ended the interview, ended the round table.
Wow.
And this was going for a little while, but they, as soon as I started talking about PEDs, end of interview, didn't get my other two questions in. I find that really interesting in that, you know, we've chased down Manny Pacquiao because he won't take a test.
Right.
But Hopkins basically, you know, Pascal kind of handled it crappy, but I don't think Mayweather really handled it very, very well either. And yet we've kind of given Hopkins a pass, and he's like a 46, like, you know, year old fighter who's beating guys half his age, and we've kind of given him a pass. And I kind of wonder why that is.
And
even
we haven't
Shane
seen
Mosley, we've kind of given a pass because he's a nice guy, even
right.
though we do know he uses PEDs. I wonder why we do that with Hopkins.
I don't know. I think the fact that the way he came up, maybe, you know, that he did everything from the bottom. Bottom of the barrel, and he was one of those. It's that old saying of the two mice that fell into a bucket of milk and turned it into cream. And you know, I think Bernard Hopkins was that mouse that turned it into cream. So we just don't want to believe that he would do such a thing. But I gotta agree with you. I sit back and don't get me wrong. I'm a Bernard Hopkins fan. You know, I like Bernard Hopkins a whole lot. You know, I think he's one of the last hard men in boxing, but. I sit there and I go, damn, you know what? He hasn't shown any signs of wear and tear. He still looks just fresh. But at the same time, I'm looking at the fights and how he's maneuvering himself. You know, he's at a level now that he can literally kind of, you know, dodge it and go around particular fights in order to get big ones that are going to be more successful or make him look just that much better, you know, but what Dawson, I think this is the real big fight for him personally because, you know, Dawson, people are judging Dawson what happened with Pascal. Pascal's a very awkward, he's a quick, throws a lot of punches type of fighter. And the temperament that Dawson has, which is laid back and really analyze what he's going to do. You could see Dawson just really draw up the picture in his mind before he throws a punch. That Pascal took advantage of that. Bernard, I just don't see Bernard doing something like that because Bernard is almost in a way, he's a Dawson himself, you know. He needs to draw things in his head before he reacts, you know. And I think that's what's going to be the falling part for Hopkins here is that he's going to be facing a guy that's going to wait for him and make him be the lead dancer in the fight where Hopkins likes to lead the dance all the time. I don't know. That's how I'm seeing it. You know, I know some fight fans are not interested with this Dawson Hopkins. I wasn't either, but I'm starting to get interested just because Gio called in and made me interested about it now.
I'm interested. Well, go ahead, Gio. I rambled.
The card itself is looking pretty good. I mean, they added a pretty good fight, the Donnie Garcia Holt fight. That's a crazy,
yeah.
crazy dangerous fight for Donnie Garcia. I mean, look at Holtz. I mean, he's coming off a huge knockout, and he's
mm-hmm.
He's just full of energy. And that's – I hope that Danny Garcia is not thinking that he's going against, you know, an old fighter. And you know, I hope he's ready because Holtz is going to bring it.
Yeah.
Holtz is he's a boxer puncher. I mean, we've seen this guy knock out people cold. So I hope he's ready.
The thing that's important, though, with Holtz is to not overrate that win over Julio. I mean,
it's a hell of a knockout. You know, it's one of the knockouts of the year, but it's not like the dude had an iron chin.
Exactly.
You know? He is, well, you know, he is Julio Diaz, rather, not Julio, but, you know, he's a chinny fighter, and he blew him out. But then you look at Danny Garcia, and there are times when I really think he's great, and or not great, but, you know, on his way to becoming a very good fighter and proving something. And then there's other times where I just look at him and kind of say lackluster performance, and he's been beating up some heavy bag type guys, you know. I wasn't that impressed in his last fight. I thought he gassed. It's going to be an interesting fight. It's like somewhere in the mirage of both of these guys' last few wins, you know, we're going to find out the truth, you know. And does Danny Garcia have a really good chin? We'll definitely find that out. I mean, you know, Kendall Holt's no joke. I mean, that power is real, and he's a battle-tested veteran. And Danny Garcia is a prospect. So this is his graduation. You know, is he going to pass? You know, it's way too early for me to make that pick. But, you know, I kind of lean towards Holt in that. But I really like the Linares fight, you know, with DeMarco. I think that's going to be a hell of a fight.
That's going to be
agree.
A great fight right there.
People are saying that, you know, Antonio DeMarco is, you know, he's pretty much done. But, you know, Jorge Linares with the inactivity and the injuries, he's not going to be the same Jorge Linares in the past.
Exactly.
He's going to have some ring rust, and it's going to be a competitive fight.
In his last fight, too, that was one of the weirdest Mexicans I've ever seen in my life, the guy that DeMarco fought. The guy just threw a million punches, was all lanky. He looked
yeah,
like
he
could
awkward.
Hit him and get him out of there, and he would come right back. He was like a zombie movie. Yeah, I don't know if he's done. I think DeMarco had been off since that Valero loss, as I understand. And
yeah.
As I remember, yeah.
Right, yeah,
and,
right.
You know, I think layoff is a lot of things. Like I'm writing up this Ronnie Shields piece about Cintron when he was on our show a few weeks back. Remember, he talked about that. Inactivity just kills fighters, man. You got to fight to get your groove back. And
yep.
I think these are kind of two guys that haven't really been fighting a lot, Linares and DeMarco. You know, I think Linares, though, is not going to walk right through him, but I think he's the more talented, more versatile guy, more, he's got more in his game.
Well, these are two guys that haven't been active, you know, and DeMarco, this is the thing that kind of gets me is that people are counting out DeMarco right away. There's like, oh, he's shot, he's no longer good. Even when he fought, you know, the late Edwin Valero, he was competitive, you know, he kept coming forward, he didn't stop trying, he was taking his beat, you know what I mean? He was getting beat up pretty bad, so to count him out coming in this fight with Linares, where Linares got knocked out in the first round, you got to say this is a competitive fight. This is a fight between two guys that are still coming in with questions that are going to be answered for the fight fans. What is left between two of these warriors here? You know, hey George, I'm going to put you back on hold, bro. We got a bunch of callers and stuff, and we're still waiting for Seth Mayhem Mitchell to call in and talk to us about his fight happening on August 27th. So I'm going to put you on hold. Don't hang up, brother.
All right.
And if you guys haven't had a chance, you got to go to Leaving the Ring. Check out George Jimenez, Geo Image photos, man. The guy takes fantastic photos for us on Leaving the Ring. He's a, you know, he's a great guy, man. Anyways, I believe we got our guest that's on right now. So everybody that's called in, please stay on hold. Be patient. We'll patch you in on Leaving the Ring, and then we'll chop it up some more boxing here on Leaving the Ring. But for right now, let's put on Seth Mayhem Mitchell. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
How you doing?
Doing good, brother. You know, I'm going to introduce myself, David Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. So how you doing, man? How's everything going for you in camp?
I'm doing great. I'm excited about the fight on August 27th. Right now I'm in my hardest part of my training this week, and next week is my hardest part of my training. Then we'll taper down, but I'm feeling great. And I'm just looking forward to putting on a great show August 27th for my fans.
Now, Golden Boy picked you up, you know, and the one thing that picked you up, obviously, is you're an American, and heavyweight division has been really, really shallow, and they're looking for somebody, you know, to kind of maybe bring some light, you know. But I was looking at your bio, and I found this kind of interesting, you know, when you were growing up, people had given you a name by the name of Little Superstar. They say you're a dominating older athlete in the neighborhood. You know, you picked up basketball and football games. You know, you were in high school and college, you were playing football. What happened? What made the transition from football to boxing?
Like I said before, I never was a big boxing fan. I was always a casual boxing fan. But I believe that, you know, God blesses everybody with a particular talent, some type of skill. Not all of us tap into it. But from an early age, I've noticed that athletics, competing in sports is my gift. It's something that comes natural to me. I've always excelled in it. I've always, you know, exceeded, you know, more than my peers. And true, back when I was little, they used to always, the older cats in the neighborhood, they would always, you know, choose me first to be on the pickup basketball game or the pickup football game. But going to boxing, it was just, I saw Tom Zivakowski after my football career was over due to knee injury. I saw Tom Zivakowski have his pro debut at Madison Square Garden. And I can honestly say, if it wasn't for me seeing him, because he played in the Big Ten, he played, you know, safety for Notre Dame, and I played against him, he just inspired me to start boxing. And once I saw him box, I was like, if he can do it, I can do it. And I knew once I decided to delve into the sport, I was going to go at 100% and I could have tremendous success.
Now, you're getting in with Mike Malo, right, at the HP Pavilion. And, you know, guy's been around, his name's been around, you know, and he's fought some pretty big guys, and he's fought some really good contenders, from McClain to Gelato. To you, is this a step up for you? I mean, is this Golden Boy trying to find out where you really are in your pro career?
If you ask the writers and the people, my last fight was a step up, and I don't take any fighter, you know, for granted. I'm going to, you know, train hard, I'm going to pray, and I'm going to prepare. And, you know, this fight is supposed to be a step up, and I'm looking forward to a grueling fight. I know Mike Malo from the tape that I watch. He's a game fighter. He comes to fight, and he's tough, and I don't expect him to lay down, and I don't expect to lay down either. So I'm looking forward to a grueling fight. Do I see it going the distance? I don't know. I don't go out there looking for knockouts. I just know I'm going to be in tip-top shape. I'm going to the best of my ability, execute my trainer's game plan, and hopefully we can get him out of there. But I'm definitely prepared to go to full 10 rounds.
Well, I just say, you know, writers saying that Evans Quinn was a step up. I mean, they obviously were wrong, because you knocked him out in the first round. You know, I mean, and it looks like your past fights, actually, you know, even from Torres Sykes, you knocked him out in the fifth round. You got a lot of first round knockouts. To you, Seth, is that good for you? I mean, is your trainer happy with that? Are you happy with that? Or do you feel, I need rounds in order to be experienced and to have, you know, the qualities for the pro rankings, I need rounds. How do you feel about that?
I think it's important. At the same time, my training is harder than my fights, and that's how hopefully it continues to go that way. And, you know, I'm in a business where I don't get paid by the rounds. I'll say this. I'm always prepared to go the distance, but I never want to go the distance. That will, you know, make my career longer, not taking as much punishment. But, you know, I get a lot of, when I spar a lot of hard rounds with quality opposition. And when it comes down to the fight, I don't really want to go a lot of rounds. You know, I know a lot of people say it might be, you know, detrimental to you in the long run, but I train hard and I spar hard and I spar a lot of rounds. So, you know, I just want to – my main goal in this fight business is to hopefully become financially secure and leave with my health. And so that's my main goal as a boxer.
Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel. Go ahead, brother.
Hey, how you doing, Seth? Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
You had a really short amateur career, but impressive. 9-1, 9 knockouts. Was there a particular point where you realized, okay, I'm a puncher, and that's going to carry me over into the pro ranks? Was there anything about your skill set that said, I'm going to be a pro, or did you enter the amateurs, considering you came to the game so late, with just basically saying, I'm going to get some experience, and then I'm going to turn pro? Was there a turning point?
That was pretty much the game plan. When I wanted to try to make the Olympic team, I knew it was a long shot because I started so late and I only had like 15 months to, you know, open up the eyes of the people, whoever, you know, decides to for you to get on the Olympic team. So once I knew I wasn't making the Olympics, you know, it was turning pro from there on out. And I always felt that I had a pro style. I wasn't a pity pat puncher, go out there and try to, you know, win on points. I try to take my time, and I possess a lot of speed and power. So I just, you know, wanted to stay focused and felt that I could, you know, make some noise in the heavyweight division.
There's a lot of guys that over the years have crossed over to our sport, not done that great. You know, Michael Grant kind of comes to mind. He's been a perennial contender, but I think he was a basketball player for years, switched over to boxing, and then, you know, ultimately got knocked out by Lewis and had the rest of his career. Do you look at those guys, those other crossover athletes, to see what they did wrong and try to correct that? Or do you even think of yourself as a crossover athlete? Do you just think, okay, I'm an athlete who's now a boxer? How do you look at yourself?
The latter, an athlete who's now a boxer. You know, like I said before, all of my gifts come from my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I'm very humble. You know, I work hard, and he's just blessed me with decent size. You know, I've been a heavyweight. Technically, I've been a heavyweight. I was 200 pounds, and 198 pounds to be exact, when I was 15 years old, entering the ninth grade. When I went to college,
damn,
I was 6'2". 238 pounds and a half at 19 years old. So I'm a true heavyweight who possesses, you know, true power. I'm not a blown up heavyweight. And I just, with all of that, I just believe that my determination and my dedication and my work ethic is what helped me prevail.
You know, we have tons of listeners, and a lot of our listeners, you know, either on Twitter or on Facebook, and they like to ask questions, Seth. And one of the questions right now is being posed by George Jimenez, GeoImage, on Twitter right now. He's asking that you were approached by the Kingpin Johnson about a fight, and he was wondering, whatever happened to that? Was there any talk about it? And is that a fight that you would look forward to and getting involved with?
I mean, if it makes sense, you know what I'm saying, I'll fight him. You know, if it makes sense. I'm not, you know, thinking about Kevin Johnson right now. I'm not. Kevin Johnson is not on my radar. If my promotional company and my management, like I said, when he approached me, if they want to make the fight happen, you know, they can make the fight happen. But I think, you know, he's been a little stagnant because of his performance against Klitschko. He didn't even, you know, show up, you know, throwing
right.
299 punches in 12 rounds. So, and he's only fought three times since 2009. And so he's just trying to, you know, get himself a fight, you know. And, you know, I wish him the best in his future. If we end up locking horns, you know, one day, then, you know, I'll come out the victor. Trust and believe that. But, like, I'm not thinking about Kevin Johnson right now.
When you look around the division, I'm just curious, do you look at yourself as a next-generation heavyweight, or are you looking towards the Klitschkos? I mean, you're pretty young in your development. I mean, you're barely getting into the step-up fights. Do you think that's even a reachable goal? Those guys are kind of old and maybe will retire in a year or so. Is that a reachable goal for you, or are you going to look around at the Chris Areolas and, you know, maybe a Tomas Adamek, those guys, you know, kind of the next generation, maybe even a David Haye if he sticks around? What's your plan overall?
My plan, if the Klitschkos are still around within the next, you know, 12 to 15 months, you know, I believe that if I continue to progress as I have in each fight and I don't have any setbacks, you know, those are the fighters that I want to fight. You know, I understand everything, you know, takes time, but I've said it numerous times that I believe it's the Klitschkos and then it's the rest of the heavyweight division. And right now I feel that I mix in with anybody in the heavyweight division very well right now. But, you know, once the Klitschkos, you know, you have to dethrone the Klitschkos right now. And, you know, if they are around, still fighting in the next 12 to 15 months, I believe I have the skill sets to, you know, to challenge them.
That's pretty early, Seth. I mean, 12 months. I mean, so are you and your management team looking to step it up in amounts of fights of having within that period of time? I mean, because you started at 2008. It looks like that in order to face the Klitschkos, you're going to have to play catch-up to keep improving.
I think I have I'm a sponge in the gym. I have a fast learning curve. I've learned a lot thus far, and I'm still learning, you know, today. But I just believe it's a business, and when the opportunity comes, I believe I'll be ready for it. Like I said, I think that, you know, the Klitschkos, they're at the top of the division right now. In the heavyweight division, it's the Klitschkos and everybody else, and I feel that I'm right there with everybody else right now. So, I mean, if everybody else are getting shots, you know, I can see myself getting in the shot in the next five or six fights.
You know, now, Mike,
go ahead.
I just got one question. I'll give it right back to you here, Gabe, and stuff. You know, Mike Malo hasn't fought this whole year, you know, and his last two fights he had won by unanimous decision. He's only won 8 rounds. Now, Seth, you've been active. Do you automatically jump all over this man? Do you try to find out whether those 8 months have been a big toll for him, you know, the layoff? Do you want to see if there's ring rust there, and do you want to shake it off for him?
Definitely. I'm going to come out there, you know, with a tight defense and, you know, use my jab and use my smarts. Like I said, I don't go out there too aggressive and too audacious when I fight, because it's heavyweight division and all it takes is one shot and you can be, you know, looking up at the lights. So, you know, I'm going to go out there being smart, but I'm going to do what I do, and he'll have to adjust to me. But I consider myself an aggressive boxer puncher, and that's what I plan on doing. And, you know, definitely plan on coming out the victor.
I would definitely categorize you as that. You know, and watching you, the thing that I'm most impressed about, particularly because you came to the game so late, you have excellent balance and very nice footwork. I think the probably one comes off the other. If I had a criticism of you, it's that your head, your upper body doesn't move all that much. You're a little stationary. Do you think that's, when you're working in the gym, I guess my assessment is leading up to the question, are you working on specific tools each day, each training camp? What are you trying to add to your game? Or are you just trying to pick up as much as you can, everything, you know, every day?
I'm trying to pick up as much as I can, but what you just pointed out is funny, because me and my trainer and my manager, we talked about that about a week and a half ago, not letting my, you know, head stay in the same spot more than 2 seconds. So that's the upper body movement that you're talking about. And, you know, bringing my hands back after I throw my combinations. And I'm my biggest critic, and sometimes I'll watch a fight and I'll be so disappointed in myself, and they'll, you know, tell me not to be that hard on myself. But, you know, after each fight we try to go back to the basics, because you don't wanna, you know, get comfortable. But every fight there's gonna be things that I need to work on. But one of the main things that we're working on is my head movement and getting on different levels, and also countering off my defense.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the levels, too, of just kind of like bending your legs a little bit. And because sometimes you fight really tall, which is great in some circumstances, but sometimes I kind of look at you and like you're a little bit vulnerable. But, man, I got to tell you, every time I see you, I'm more and more impressed. At first I was like skeptical. You know,
I can't wait to see him live.
Boxer, you know? Yeah,
you know,
me too.
Seth, you know, let me ask you this. When are you coming down? When do you come down here to San Jose, California? And are you guys setting up a camp, or are you just coming down and resting before the fight?
We're coming down to just rest before the fight. And when I rest, I train all the way up until I fight on Saturday. My last day of training will be on Thursday. But it's real light, you know, real light, just shaking out, working the sweat. But I'll get out there on Tuesday, I believe.
Great, man. You know what? I'll make sure that our PR gets a hold of you guys when you come down, because I like to come out and check you out while you're training and stuff. I'll be there Saturday night to see you live as well.
Oh, most definitely. I appreciate it. And I love to come out and train in front of you guys. And like I said, man, look forward to, you know, me putting on an impressive show. You know, a heavyweight that's gonna fight. You know, that's the main thing. I'm a fight. Win, lose, or draw, Seth Mitchell is going to fight. He's not going to be in a boring fight.
Now, are they televising this? Is it going to be on the undercard, you know, on the television part on HBO, or have they told you anything about that yet?
No, it'll be I'm co-main event. It'll be televised.
Oh, beautiful. That'd be great, man. Well, Seth, hey, brother, I appreciate you calling in and speaking to us. I can't wait to see you August 25th on the undercard of Madonna and Guerrero in San Jose at the HP Pavilion. And again, man, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Keep me in your prayers, please.
Absolutely, brother. Uh-huh. There you go. Seth Mayhem Mitchell, heavyweight, American heavyweight, who's going to be coming down to San Jose, California at the HB Pavilion. If you haven't got your tickets, you better do it now because I heard they're selling out pretty fast. I was talking to Mario Serrano just the other day, and he was telling me, man, hey, you know what, San Jose people and the Bay Area folks are definitely, you know, excited, and they're selling out, they're buying up the tickets, so you want to be able to come out there, man. I mean, if you're from the Southern California, take the drive. It's only 6 hours, man, and if you speak over 100 miles and stuff, you'll make it in four. No biggie. Yeah. You get a ticket, so what? Crumble it in front of the police officer and throw it in the back of your seat and say, hey, I eat these for breakfast.
Yeah. I forget about these all the time.
Yeah. You know,
it's nice to hear a heavyweight that's articulate, you know.
Right.
He's got a degree. And a guy that's in shape. And I really think that speed and power that he's got is pretty real. I mean, the speed, obviously, you can tell if a guy's fast, but I think that power is real. Evans Quinn was supposed to be a test, and he took dude out fast. You know,
yeah, I'm telling you, the first round, that was
round, we were all kind of surprised. Like, this is going to be a step up. You know, the guy's only got like 5 losses, and he should go some rounds, and boom, just out. You know, I think he's going to blow right through Mallo too. Although Mallo's got that kind of style that he can stink out the joint. You know, he can
right.
grab onto you. He can make it an ugly fight.
And I think
fight.
That's what he's going to probably gear for, just being with that layoff. You know, it's a pretty long layoff. He hasn't been in the ring. He did win his last two fights, but, you know, I think in Mallo's corner and in their concern is to tie up, you know, Seth, because this kid's coming to charge, you know, and he's been going on a great KO ratio on his last couple of fights. And with Evans there and seeing what happened, that's Mike Mallo in their mind frame right now. And I could be wrong about this here, Gabe, but in their mind frame right now, do you really want to go toe-to-toe and blow-for-blow with a guy that has been on that streak? Or do you want to tire him out and kind of tread him to the deeper waters to see exactly what he's all,
oh, yeah.
what he's made, you know?
Yeah, especially a guy that's kind of new to the game. You want to take him to as deep a water as you possibly can, even if you are, you know, Mike Mallo, who's, you know, he is who he is. He's not a I just don't give him much of a chance in this fight, you know. The possibility is that he can take Mitchell into deep water. I don't think of him as much of a puncher, although that's the other thing we really don't know about Mitchell. I haven't really seen him tapped on the chin just yet.
Right.
And that's the big key, and I think, you know, particularly because he doesn't move his head very much and has a tendency to stand a little too tall, you know, there's always that possibility that somebody could just, you know, your head's just like on a T-ball and somebody's just going to knock it into the stands. So, you know, we'll see, you know, with him. I have a lot of hope for him, though. I think he's has a lot of potential as a fighter. I wish he'd have started younger, because I think he could be a real major factor. But by this point, his life, he's, you know, 29. We'll see what he can do, you know, later on down the line. But I'm always welcoming of boxers, boxer punchers, and heavyweights who value coming in shape and focus. You know, and I didn't get a chance to ask him. I wanted to ask him if he breaks down tape, but I imagine he does, being an ex-football player. I spent a lot of time watching tape and breaking down the mistakes. I imagine he's something of a perfectionist in that regard. I like the whole thing, you know. I want to see him in against, you know, I want to see how he does with Mallo with a kind of an uglier style. And then after that, you know, let's put him in with a top 10 guy, top 20 guy, you know, him versus Povetkin or somebody like that, you know. Although I think Povetkin's a little tied up, I think, with Chagayev. But let's see him in against somebody real, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's the big thing there, and you know, and you know, talk about his balance. We were talking about that a little earlier. That really kind of rolls over into his football background and his basketball background, because you know, playing b-ball, you gotta have balance, you know, I've seen kids that come to the gym and they show they have good balance, and the first thing I always ask them, do you play basketball? And they say, yeah, for some reason. It's not for some reason, but basketball gives you great balance, you know. So that's one of the good things about Seth Mitchell. And I know the conversion, of transitioning himself into becoming a boxer has not been the most successful for a lot of fighters that have done that, you know, that have left the field to get into the ring. But there's never it can't be done, You know, and Seth Mitchell may be one of those guys that can't be done. The only thing I'm worried about is that whole 12 months, that 12-month period of him talking about going after Kalisco's. I think right now Seth Mitchell needs to worry about what's being put in front of him and what needs to be done in his arsenal and what he needs to perfect. You know, obviously you have to think about the Mitchells, about the Kalisco's, my bad, Kalisco's, because those are the money bags. You know what I mean? That's like every other fighter in the lower weight divisions. They want Pacquiao and Mayweather because those are the reasons why fighters become fighters and fighters fight hard and train hard. So a lot of ways I like what he said, but then you got to go back and go, you know, 12 months may not be the realistic time. Maybe 2 years if the Kalisco's stick around.
Yeah, because you're not just building a fighter, but you got to build demand. You know, you've got to build a reason for the Kalisco's to go, yeah, let me fight this younger, faster, hard-hitting dude, you know. Let's take
but
that,
that
on.
But you know what, though?
Career.
The Kalisco's, that hasn't been a really major factor for the Kalisco's because they fought a lot of people that doesn't have a big demand just because of the fact that that you know what I mean? That pick of the crops hasn't been watered. You know, there's been a rain spell for the heavyweights. There's not a lot of them being produced.
But a dangerous guy, if he's looking dangerous and he has no draw, there's a big difference between fighting, you know, Albert Sosnowski, who's uh-huh. got a draw, you know,
right.
But he's also very beatable. You're like, all right, let me give this guy a shot. You know, the big difference between fighting him and then fighting a guy like Seth Mitchell, who has potential to get you, you know, it might surprise you. The risk versus reward, you know, that's really the thing. But we don't really know the true substance of Seth Mitchell. But you're right, I like the answer. The question of do you want to face the Klitschko's or what you want to do is more like a, you know, it's kind of a litmus test for the guy, you know. I don't think anybody's ever going to answer, you know, my ultimate goal is to fight my way to the middle. You know, I want to fight all the second-tier and third-tier guys and cash out, never fight a champion. So he said the right thing. You know, I want to fight those guys, and I probably realize his time's a factor, but still, you know, there's a lot of questions there. I don't know what his chin's like. You know, we haven't seen him really face a – well, I guess Evans Quinn is something of a puncher. He didn't really get a chance to punch.
He didn't really get a chance to do anything. Seth Mitchell made sure of that, man. You know, Fight Fan, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can speak to us here on Leave the Ring. Myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the scenes, is, of course, David Chen. Hey, we're going to be giving out some autograph pictures, courtesy of MyBoxingFans.com. Right now, I got two of them. I got Vance Monterosian signed, original picture, and then I got Sugar Shane Mosley signed. You know, so we'll be giving those out next week. So if you want to call in and try to get those pictures, definitely can. Next week, though, not this week. We got too many other things happening right now. I didn't even keep Dave Chen up to par with what we were going to do here. Gabe, I got to tell you this. This is the thing, though. With Dave Chen, Dave calls me up and says, we got to have these guys on. I said, perfect. I said, 7 o'clock. Then, but this is the thing about Leaving the Ring is that we're always scrambling to get things prepared and done and be prepared as much as we can. So we were trying to find out about other guests. And then Gabe hits me up and says, hey, we got a Beko at 7. So Dave Chen, I forgot to text you, bro, and let you know. We're going to have to move the other guests a little later. I know he's going to kill me. You know?
He's going to kill us. Actually got to call Beko right now and give him his 30-minute reminder. So I'll be right back. They told me to give him a call just to make sure
that way
we don't get to 7 o'clock and he's gone. But if he's available right now, I will pull him
love
in.
Love to take him. Yeah,
all
definitely.
Right.
Definitely love to take him. You got some ESPN fight. Hey, speaking about ESPN, man, I hope you guys had a chance to check out Friday Night Fights just last week. You know, when we had Coleman, the pet bull, Tim Coleman, the pet bull, come in and talk to us about his feud with Paris. Okay, with Vernon Paris. I mean, we call this the Facebook grudge match, and it lived up to the grudge in that fight. Both guys came out swinging. Both guys were ready to fight. Both guys were looking to take each other's heads off. They didn't have very high ratio knockout power in their record, in their resume. But, dudes, these guys lived it up. They showed exactly what they were both made of. Coleman did not become the successor. You know, he said he was going to give Paris a bully beatdown, but it was an equal beatdown. You know, the only thing was some body shots that Paris was throwing and landing, man, they were hellacious. The thing with Coleman, though, Gabe, and I don't know if you saw this and if you agree with me on this, but Coleman and me just kind of threw out everything he knew out the door and really went in there with more of a hatred game plan than a strategic game plan.
Okay, I'm back.
I'm over here talking to myself, man.
he's just waking up, I think. We'll get him in 30 minutes. He seems kind of out of it. I feel kind of bad, but Alan told me to call him and wake him up at 6:30 to remind him. So this is your wake-up call from Leaving in the Ring.
From Leaving in the Ring, your wake-up call, man. Now, I was going back. I was
talking about Paris and Coleman.
Right, yeah. And what I was asking, because I thought you were on the line, I just, you know, yeah, I was talking to myself. Actually, I was talking to all the listeners and stuff, but what I was asking, what I was saying was that when Tim Coleman came into that fight, it looked to me he came in with a hatred plan rather than a game boxing plan. He kind of threw that out the door. With Paris, to me, he kind of set the pace of getting Coleman out of a game plan, and he came in very calm and collective, and he stuck to what he does best, which is box. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it was kind of one of those things of it came down to, you know, who could handle whose power, and Paris had a little more speed, a little more length on him, and just he could take, you know, Coleman's power, and Coleman couldn't take his. You know, he got hurt. I think it was the end of the first round, or end of the second round, Coleman did. He got rocked by I think it was a left and then uppercut. To me, I think maybe you're right, though. He got really so worked up, so angry, and really he wanted to prove that he could hurt this guy. And
right.
And I think that was kind of the wrong fight. He's more of a natural boxer. And I think, you know, initially they just really went at it. They were throwing punches and going crazy. And then I think he realized, like, midway through, you know what, this guy can hurt me. I need to be more of a boxer. By then it was kind of too late to get passive, you know, and Paris had found his rhythm and just came on and got him out of there. I always feel bad for a dude that talks so much trash and had kind of seemed legitimately angry, not just, you know, being a loudmouth braggart, but like, this guy, you know, kind of offended me and I'm angry about it. And then to see him get his ass kicked, you know, kind of, and get stopped at the end, I always feel kind of an empathy for the guy, but it was a hell of a fight. That's really the bottom line.
It was a great fight.
It was a high level technique. You know, both guys were throwing everything with bad intentions, but they weren't sloppy in it. They really stayed within their form. It was just a hell of a fight. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I didn't know what to expect.
You know what is funny is that this is what I was really surprised about, is that in the beginning, when we were looking and analyzing that fight there, we were thinking, okay, there's no way this fight is going to have a KO in it or a stoppage. This is going to go all full rounds, okay? We're going to have a full set of rounds of just two guys going at it. But that first round, I'm sitting there, and I'm sipping on my beer, and I'm barbecuing at the same time. I'm looking. My older brother came down. It was his birthday. And, you know, he's starting to get back into the boxing scene. He's leaving the MMA world. He's leaving that behind because he just says it's falling apart. And he's coming back to where the grass is greener. And this was actually a perfect moment for him to become a fight fan. We're sitting in that first round when they decided to lit themselves up. I mean, that first round, man, that pace was like, okay, is this the pace that's going to take on? Because if this is the pace, there's going to be a knockout. Somebody's going to go.
Yeah.
And it came down to it. That pace definitely led to what was going to be the outcome of that fight, which was going to be a mid-round knockout. You know, a mid-round stoppage. And them body shots that Paris was landing were fantastic. Ooh. Because he was giving that shoulder up. You know, he was leading in with that shoulder. And every time, you know, Coleman opened up, he knew that Coleman was headhunting. And he was like, you know what, while he's headhunting and he's focusing on landing and planning and to land some big shots, I'm going to weaken him with some body shots. I'm going to make him not see him, because Coleman did not see a lot of those body shots when they came his way.
No, he didn't. You know, he just, I mean, I think a lot of the things were against him. And I felt, it's really weird, because on Monday I was so convinced, you know, that Vernon Paris would win. I watched the tape, thought the style was all wrong for Coleman. You know, the length of Paris, he had a little bit faster hands. I like to let his hands go in combination, whereas Coleman kind of waits for like one or two shots. And then listening to him and then kind of taking stock of, you know, where Paris's camp had gone, you know, his trainer not in the corner. But then it turns out neither Mayweather showed up that night. you know, which is, I don't really understand the, you know, that's a whole other bag. I wouldn't even go into the Mayweathers, but, you know, it was supposed to be,
right,
Mayweather versus Mayweather, and then, like, neither guy showed up, which I just think is really weird, and especially when you look into, you know, well, that's talking to Jesse Vargas, he's no longer with Roger Mayweather. I just kind of wonder about those guys. You know, they're just kind of strange. It always seems like they get a fighter for maybe like one or two fights, and then that guy just kind of moves on. Like, I don't know. I just think that's a whole other show, just overrated. But anyways, you know, to me, it just, I think Coleman kind of took himself out of his game. You know, he's normally kind of more of a calm, cool, collected boxer who likes to counterpunch and let you come at him. And this, he tried to be the aggressive guy and meet up with an aggressive guy. And to me, you know, it's always that thing of, you know, you box a brawler, you brawl a boxer. And he made the mistake of brawling with a brawler, you know, or trying to, you know, box and punch with a boxer puncher. And it just came down to maybe Paris is a little bit better than we thought he is, too. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe his head is screwed on a little bit tighter than everybody would have us believe. And it didn't. He sure didn't look like he had been smoking crack during camp. That's for sure.
No, it didn't.
You know, the only person that was smoking crack was me for changing my pick, because I don't think anybody picked Vernon Paris to win. You know, I had him on Monday, and then I, like a dumbass, I changed on Thursday. But, you know.
You know.
I'm still thinking about that Ibeco pick, too.
I'm going to make my pick with Ibeco and Morris, right, you know, but I'm still – God, I'm still on the fence on that one. You know, I got to admit, it's a very difficult fight to pick, and it has nothing to do with favoring the guy or knowing the guy. It's just the overall, the match itself. It's just so hard to sit there and say, yeah, this guy has the more of an upper hand. This guy has more. He could be a little bit more dominant on this part. I don't know. To me, when it equals down, there's some to some levels. They really. They really do show that it can be anybody's night on Saturday night, you know?
Yeah, it's true, you know, and it's just one of those things, or, you know, in this case, Friday, but it just comes down to, for me anyways, this is why I never talk trash, you know, going into some sort of like a competition, although, you know, I don't compete anymore, but I always wonder about those guys that just talk. A big game. I mean, a few guys, like, you know, Hopkins uses it like an art form, and he does it in a way that's not talking trash, but it's like logically breaking down how, you know, and why this other person is going to lose. You know, it's a lot of, you know, I think a lot of psychological warfare. I think Floyd just downright wears people down and confuses them with his trash talk. You know, trying to follow his train of thought is damn near impossible. With Coleman, I think he burned a lot of angry energy, went crazy and kind of ranted and you know, he wasn't like overly emotional, but it was this kind of like rage or kind of a release. And I think maybe he would have done better to kind of hold all that in, save it for the fight, you know, and let his fist do the talking. Because I think
right.
That plays on you, man. You know, you're losing, you're hurt. You've got to be thinking, I can't lose to this guy, you know, after everything I've said. And that probably works against you, too. It's just a case for keeping your mouth shut and letting your fist do the talking, ultimately.
Yeah, exactly.
And not smoking crack.
Well, I know you don't smoke crack. I know you smoke that good stuff.
Cigarettes, yeah. I'm a big cigarette. I almost quit with cigarettes. I've tapered down. Yeah, I've tapered down to like 3 a day. Not bad.
I know. I'm going to leave it alone, man. I'm going to walk away from
medicine.
That. Yeah.
Leave my medicine alone.
Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You know what? We got some interesting ESPN fights coming up this Friday. We should talk a little bit about that. Kerbin Cichone is going to be, I believe, the headliner of that ESPN card on Friday night fights on ESPN. So, you know, the thing about ESPN is they've been having a great run for this past month. Whether they keep it up or not, Kermit Cichone's coming on as a big puncher. I know exactly what happened with Carlos Molina, but I'm not going to crucify him for it because that fight was still very, very entertaining. And a lot of ways to me, I'm just curious to seeing, you know, him on the path of him getting himself back together, okay? And that's the whole reason why he's being on the ESPN card. But really quick, fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. We do have Joseph Arbeco scheduled to be on the show at 7 o'clock, who's going to be facing the Mexican star Adner Maris Saturday at the Hard Rock, Casino. You can see where my mind's at right now.
That's the club first, afterwards.
Right, yeah, exactly, you know. Hey, but first, you know what? I want to patch in Dave Chen had scheduled some guests to be on, and they're on right now, so let's put them in real quick. Steve Evans is a matchmaker, fights at the Fish and Head. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, leaving the ring.
Good, how you doing? Doing real good.
Good, bro. So you got this, it's an amateur fight that's happening, right? This is all amateurs on the 20th?
Yes, sir. Yes, it is.
So yeah, I'm looking at you got like Travis Roberts at 152. You got Walter Robinson. Give me a little bit of a background check on these fighters that you're having here. And it's going to be at the Fish Head, right?
Yes, sir. It's Travis actually is fighting Greg Wright out of Muddy Moe's Boxing in the main event at 152 pounds. Travis, this is going to be his first open class fight, along with Greg Wright's first open class fight. Walter Robinson, he's from Ground Control. The fight that Walter's fighting is Chico Dunlap, who, funny enough, actually has two sons that are 11 and 13 that are fighting on the same card, so that should be interesting. But those guys are rematching. Chico came in on 2 days' notice a few months back and fought Walter, and it was a really good fight, so both guys wanted to rematch, and we put it on the card.
You know, we're always interested, and we always try to keep up with the amateur scene, and just because of the fact that I believe it's very important for our sport to keep producing, you know, youth and that are gonna eventually, hopefully, turn pros and keep the sport just striving to where it always should be at, which is in the top of the class of any sport. You know, but tell me a little bit about who are the guys that right now in this amateur event on August 20th. Who are the guys that have more of the lighting on? You know, will you guys have more of the limelight or really stoked up and excited about?
Probably the guys we talked about. Greg Wright, he's been with the gym for since he was 14 years old. He's 19 now. He shows a lot of potential. We have younger guys. Sam Warfield, who's 16 years old, 217 pounds. He's 1-0 right now. Very athletic. He also plays baseball. He's throwing 90 mile an hour fastballs in high school baseball. Very extremely athletic kid, and he shows a lot of potential. He's definitely got, you know, he's got what it takes to move forward and possibly become a limelight fighter in the pro ranks.
Let me plug in Mo Rice. He's on the line right now. Let me get him into the conversation. Mo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, brother?
All right.
So we're talking about your event happening on August 20th. We're talking about your fighter, Greg Wright, and Walter Robinson. Tell me a little bit, what is one of the main focus that you have with your fighters? What are some of the things that you mainly try to focus on when you have them in training camp?
Conditioning.
Love that.
Conditioning, running. Working a lot of pads, working a lot of body bags. The body bags. And just conditioning workouts. Because 90% of the time being conditioned, you're gonna win the fight. Just on the 1-2s.
Absolutely. You know, I'm gonna pass it over right now to my co-host, but I got one more question for you, Mo. You know, let me ask you, what makes your teeth grind more when you see? Because a lot of the gyms nowadays, what we're seeing more and more is that there's guys that just come in the gym and they might, you know, probably watch the fights or they done this or they did they came in and helped out in nutrition and then they become trainers. And then they come in and they start just working on skills and not conditioning or anything else. What is the particulars of do you see of the new trainers that kind of make you shake your head and say, man, there's got to be something. There's got to be a system to clean this up.
Well, most of the new trainers now never had fights. And they come in the gym and think they could tell a guy, well, you could do this, do that, and most of them never had fights, and And how are you going to tell a guy to go three rounds when you never won one round? I mean, you know, I don't know if you're going to believe it, it pissed me off because you got half these guys coming in the gym and don't know what the hell's going on, but they look at videos and Friday night fights and think they're trainers.
Yeah, we've seen that more and more.
They put the towel around the neck, the stopwatch around, you know, and boom.
And watch videos.
When you're looking at these amateur guys, you're training them, building them up. In your mind, are you preparing them for the pro game? Because it seems like, you know, amateur sports is, although there's recently been kind of a movement towards, you know, taking the headgear off and getting more back to that pro style, but they're really two different sports, amateur boxing and pro boxing, you know, the way they're scored, even the way they're played. And to me, you see a lot of these guys come into the pros and they just don't fight the way they used to. You know, they're just looking to kind of hit and not get hit like they're worried about getting hit. Do you prepare them for the pro game like that? What's your approach?
Well, it depends on, a lot of guys I train, like our college kids and you know, kids, well, most of them are from the streets. And if they want to turn pro, I don't push them or anything. Like, if they want to turn pro, they can turn pro. But, you know, I'd rather deal with the amateurs because right now the pro fighters are mostly all about the money. They don't want to do the training. They don't want to do the work. They, you know, it's all about how much money you get, how much, you know, how much I have to give you, and you know, just simple stuff like that, stupid stuff.
To me, the thing that I've really noticed that has disappeared in the game, I mean, there's a lot of things, but the jab, you know, a real honest-to-goodness jab, not just a single, but very few guys use the double. They don't use it right. They don't change it up. Is that something that you've noticed? It just seems like the fighters today, you know, I hate to be one of those guys like, you know, they just don't make them like they used to or wishing for bygone days, but they sure don't fight like they used to anymore, you know, and to me the jab is something that's definitely a lost art. That, the uppercut, and body work. Those three things, it just seems like guys are like kind of 1-2, tie up, they don't really fight on the inside. Do you try to focus on all aspects, or does it just come down to, for you, each guy's different, and so you just got to treat them differently, you know?
Well, most time I want my guys going all body shots because you take the body out, the head goes with it. And I focus on more work in the body bag is, you know, getting them throwing up with body shots because a lot of amateur guys do all head shots. I mean, 90% of them do all head shots. And I mean, if you've ever been in an amateur fight, you sit there and look and say, damn, how come they're not going to the body? You go to the body. You know, take the body out, the head goes with it.
I think a lot of that has to do with when guys are young in the sport, they, you know, they try to emulate what they see on TV. And, you know, they're going for the knockout. And, you know, what we try to instill in them is learn how to box before you learn how to knock somebody out. I mean, it's more about movement and defense and picking your punches than it is about trying to knock someone out. I mean, and we do, you know, at the gym we do try to emphasize that. And yeah, it is something that you do see a lot of these days. I mean, if body shots are extremely important, you can do a lot of damage to the body. As you know, as you saw, you were just talking about Vernon Paris and Tim Coleman last week,
right?
And it was a prime example of what body shots, you know, how important they are to the game.
You know, let me ask you this though, because the point system is completely different from the pros to the amateur. Do you think a little bit has came down to where amateur fighters kind of tend to be afraid to throw body shots because the judges, for some reason, sometimes don't count them?
That's a huge factor. And after you have one or two amateur fights and you don't get the decision, you realize, you know, the reason for that scoring was because judges do tend to just look at the headshots. You know, if you look at Olympic-style boxing, that's really where they score. And, you know, the same judges carry over. And they learn a certain way of judging, and they kind of stick to that. And it does, you know, they don't count a lot of body shots. So, yeah, they do tend to go to the head a lot.
Let me ask you guys on this, in your guys' opinion, because we had a great program that was happening. Versus Network was hosting it. Of the World Series of Boxing, amateur fighters getting paid, gathering teams, kind of like a franchise of the NFL and NBA, and they were getting the best of the best and putting them in the ring without headgear, smaller gloves and letting them go at it to see who had the guts to be the runner up for the Olympics. Do you guys agree on something like that? Do you frown on something like that, or do you applaud that?
I totally disagree with that. I think, you know, the whole reason the system's set up the way it is with headgear and things is so that you can gradually, you know, grow as a fighter. And if you're taking a lot of headshots early in your career, it can kind of, you know, dissuade people away from, you know, wanting to fight because, you know, you gradually move up to that point. You got to condition your body and your head to taking those shots. And it's really, you know, with mixed martial arts and other combat sports becoming so big these days, you know, guys are more prone to jump out there with 4-ounce gloves and no headgear and they want to see it. But then that can be a downfall for the sport because when guys start really getting injured, possibly killed because they're in a, you know, they're taking shots that they shouldn't be taking at that point in their career, it can damage the sport. So I certainly frown upon that.
How about you, Mo? You feel the same way?
I feel the same way with Steve feels. I mean, I've been doing this 20-something years, and I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, whatever Steve said, I agree with.
The reason we're actually focusing on amateur shows at this point is because we want to take the politics out of the sport and enjoy the sport in its natural state. And with amateurs, we have a bunch of guys that are training real hard, and they're getting out there. They're not getting paid. They're getting out there because they enjoy participating in the sport. And that's what makes these events so good compared to a lot of pro events is because there's no politics. There's no contracts. You know, there's no money involved yet. It's just boxing as boxing the way it should be.
Well, let me ask you this because, you know, listeners right now, they're more educated on what happens between the pro rankings, the commissioners, the judges, with amateurs. Is there a certain commission you have to go through to hold these events? I mean, how does that work?
It's through USA Boxing. With professional boxing and other professional sports, you go through your state athletic commission. And any amateur boxing events you send, it goes through USA Boxing. It's a totally different organization. We are actually within our division is the South Atlantic Division of USA Boxing.
Now, what type of numbers or audience you guys are hoping to get or expecting to receive on Saturday on August 20th?
Right now, we're estimating probably somewhere around 500 people.
That's a pretty good turnout for an amateur fight,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, it's a very local event. We're using a lot of the bigger gyms in the area. It's a lot of friends and family, but a lot of people that are just interested in doing something different. You know, it's a cheap, you know, fun day where, you know, I mean, our tickets range from $15 to $35, and, you know, they got $2 domestic bottles. That always helps. And,
right.
You know, and it's,
and they have
especially
happy
hour. The $2 go down to $1.25 at 6 o'clock if the fights are still going. And it's a great place to hang out. It's a great venue. It's actually outside of in a bar.
Well, you know, I was going to say that anything that any type of cantina that is named after fish head, that just spells for good times. You know what I mean? That's all I can think about. I mean, fish head. Just the name alone will attract me to come down and have some oyster shooters or, you know, some brisks and beer. And then at the same time, you would get to watch some live fights. You can't
yes,
beat
sir.
That.
No. And it's on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, you know, you got Sunday to rest up, and you know, it should be a good day. We're trying to keep it fun and. That's it.
Now, just to make sure that everybody's clear, Saturday, August 20th, at the Fishhead Cantina, and that's at 4802 Benson Avenue, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and if anybody wants to purchase some tickets, if you're down over there, you want to purchase some tickets, you can go ahead and call Mighty Mo Boxing at 410-300-4061. We'll put a link up on the Leaving the Ring site as soon as we're done with the radio show. Go out and support the kids. Go out and support Mighty Mo's Boxing. And you got to definitely go out and support Fish Shit Cantina. Like I said, anything that has something named like that, you know that it just spells out for a great great time, man.
Or they just come right to the Fishhead Cantina August 19th and see Steve or Mo.
Well, there you go.
We'll be there from 7 p.m. on tomorrow and Saturday evening also. So if they want to just stop by and take advantage of the happy hour and pick up their tickets then, they can get the advance ticket price and, you know, get their tickets while they're there.
That's a great idea. You know, you go in for happy hour, talk some boxing, get all pumped up before the event happens. You walk out with a nice buzz, and you get a chance to meet some good people. Head out there, man. Head out there. Hey, Mo and Steve, man, thank you for calling in and talking to us, to myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gable Montoya from Max Boxing. And, hey, wish you guys all the support and all the luck with your guys' event. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep rooting for you guys.
Thank you guys much. We really appreciate it.
You guys take care.
Thank
you.
You know, that's the beauty, man. I mean, we definitely always got to make sure that we support these type of venues and show love because, you know, at the end of the day, this is the way I look at it. When I started up leaving the ring, it was just not to really always focus on the who's and who's of the sport, but it was to focus on everything, every aspect of the sport, from when it comes down to amateur, to pro, to women, to guys. You know, we've had it all on here on Leaving in the Ring, you know, and you got a guy like Mo and Steve that are just coming out and they're saying, look, come out, check it out. You got some young kids. You never know. You may have a chance to watch a future star in the making, and you could be one of the guys that sit back while you're having your happy hour at the Fish Head and say, hey, I was there at the Fish Head having an oyster shot, watching some good fights, Gabe.
Yeah, I just think I want to go to some place called the Fish Head. the name alone is like you had me at Fish Head.
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's why I said, you know, when I heard that, hey, you want to go out to the Fish Head? Yeah, that actually sounds like fun, man. I mean, I can just picture how it looks, you know.
And there's violence there and happy hour?
Happy hour?
Yeah, you had me at happy hour.
Exactly.
I'm all over. I've been kind of guilty of ignoring the amateurs. And this last year, I've kind of started to focus in on them a little bit more. And
right.
I think probably for the same reason that they're talking about. And one of the reasons, like when the Rams moved from L.A. and they went to St. Louis, like a bunch of my uncles, like they're like, you know what, that's it, I'm done. You know, I'm just going to watch college sports. And 6 years in as a boxing writer and dealing with pro fighters and their camps and fans and all the, you know, backbiting writers, I get why people like the amateurs. There's less bullshit. There's less politics.
Yep.
There's still politics. There's still favorites, you know, depending on what region you're in. But they're all there for the love of the sport. And that's something that I think the pros, they kind of lose that after a while, you know. Some guys just in it for the money or – it's also a little more depressing. Like, you know, we got this Kermit Cintron fight coming up on Friday and, you know, it's a really make-or-break fight, you know, and after a while, for me, and maybe I'm just a little bit sensitive, but it kind of wears on you seeing these guys kind of come and go. I think we're in the middle of a changing in the guard right now, which is always an interesting thing to watch. I think Kelly Pavlik, I think he's done. If Kermit loses this Friday, granted, Antoine Spitz not a terrible fighter. He's actually, you know, kind of a rough and tumble guy that Kermit could easily lose to. But I think if Kermit loses his fight, I think he's done. Certainly as a network fighter, it would take a lot for him to come back. And that, to me, I kind of like at least replenishing my love of boxing by going to the amateurs, watching these guys that are coming up and all excited and enthusiastic about the sport. That kind of charges my batteries anyways, you know. And I disagree with them about the WSB. It's not like they're taking guys that are just turning amateur and taking off the headgear, and here you go, you know, go out there. All these guys had like 250, 300 amateur fights. They had, you know, international titles or national titles. These were all top-level amateurs who were basically going through the process of becoming pros.
A pro, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have a big problem with it. Everybody.
No, I was all for
famous,
that. Actually,
you know?
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah, you and I realized it.
Exactly, and we supported that, you know. But, you know, I've spoken to other trainers and coaches in other gyms, and they kind of feel like the way the guys that were on right now, you know,
yeah.
Mo and Steve, they kind of felt the same way. But I think the thing is that what people hear most is no headgear, smaller gloves, going at it. You know what I mean? And, you know, when you look at those smaller gloves, and we've spoken to the World Series of Boxing, not even that, we've spoken to the fighters themselves. They all say, yeah, smaller gloves, but there's a different type of material, which we never had a chance to bring anybody on to kind of explain.
That amateur cushion in the front of it, yeah, where it's like a little more squishy, you know.
Yeah.
Probably why they didn't have that many knockouts.
Facial damage. I mean, there was going to Chris Pearson. You know, he had he had a glacis cut. You know, a few of them on his face. You know, but
some of that was from butts, though. You know, because he had a kind of a face first style in some ways. Not really face first. That's kind of denigrating the guy, but was very much an aggressive style. But some of those were headbutts. But, you know, I think actually it was Eric Fowler, who was a lightweight from the L.A. Matadors. I think he had 3 knockouts, and he had the most knockouts in the WSB last year.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I don't really see the danger that everybody else is kind of freaking out about. I'd rather see these guys kind of go against top-level people and acclimate to the pro game that way than watching these guys, like, you know, I hate to always kind of pile on him, but like Andre Berto, you know, fighting just bum after bum on HBO, and I got to watch it, you know. That's not very exciting to me. I mean, I don't need him to fight the ultimate guys, like, right off the bat, but, you know, somebody better. I think there's maybe a middle ground between the two things. That whole league is going to be restructuring. You know, I think they've lost 2 teams at the Americas Conference. They've added teams in India. I think the Matadors and the Miami team are going to be, like, folded into one of the other conferences. They're really shifting everything around, but from what I understand with AIBA in general, and it's always kind of interesting when you ask USA Boxing guys what they think of the WSB, none of them ever like it. If you ask just, you know, people that are not connected with that organization, they're a little more open to hearing about it, but it seems like USA Boxing seems very threatened by it, at least the people that I've talked to that are connected to it. So I wonder if there's some sort of you know, kind of politics going on there. But I think it's by 2012 or 2013, AIBA is going to be moving towards more of that system of the WSB.
Right. Yeah, you know, I don't think there is some politics behind it. I just think that the understanding is not fully there yet, you know, because you got to remember this is a new system that they're trying, a new way of giving boxing exposure. But in a lot of ways, how I've explained it to trainers and other people that are, you know, kind of frowning at it is by introducing it as this is the way things were done back in the 80s. You know, when Sugar Ray Leonard was fighting, it was no headgear, you know. They're kind of taking it back in that way. This is not new. This is something that was done, but they're just bringing in some new factors into it now. You know, some other things that really kind of spice it up and strike interest, because that's one of the main things where a lot of people say, like, well, the Olympics, the boxing doesn't come out to 3 or 4 in the morning. You got to be a real boxing zombie to say, I'm going to do that. You know what I mean? And I only know a few, including myself, that would actually stay up that late. Not just, record it, but actually want to watch it live. You know, I did it when Ward was fighting. You know, I was staying up in the middle of the night recording all of his fights. You know, even back with Miguel Cotto. I even got, like, De La Hoya and stuff, you know. So I think
I watched Amir Khan when in the Blockbuster.
Yep.
Yeah, I was in a Blockbuster in the middle of the day, and I didn't know it was on. I mean, they really kind of screwed the whole programming of that, you know. Remember, it used to be like prime time, or like, you know, at least afternoon, like, all right, here comes the boxing finals. And like, boy, I can't even find it anymore. I mean, I think that's a big part of the downfall, you know, of building the next stars in the mainstream, you know. Nowadays, it's like you have to do it totally backwards. Like, you have to do it like Manny Pacquiao. You have to keep winning, and kind of reach a peak where you're on these, you know, pay-per-views and you're on the 24/7 type shows, the way Floyd's done it. Gone are the days of Sugar Ray Leonard or even De La Hoya being in prime time, winning their gold medal, and everybody sees it. Everybody cares, you know, the casual fan, just your regular sports fan cares. They just don't give a shit anymore, probably because they can't see it. They can't find
it. Right. Yeah.
You know? You gotta train your audience at some point, you know.
Exactly, you know. And man, I keep thinking about fish heads, and I'm just getting thirstier and thirstier. Ooh. You know.
I'm gonna call Joseph Agbeko.
Go right ahead.
Well,
you
right
call
back.
Joseph Agbeko. I'm just gonna sit here and daydream. I'm not even daydream. I might put it. You know, to real is head out to Mi Pueblo around here and pick up some oysters and some Coronas and then come back home. And you know, I bought a little small swimming pools for the kids, the little tiny ones, and put my feet in there and pretend I'm at the beach. Plug in the fan. Have it at high speed blowing at me so my hair, you know, flaps through the wind, and drink my beer and just think that I'm at Fish Head. Fight fans, you want to call in, you can. It's number 347-215-7598. I don't know what that ticking sound is in the background, but you certainly can call up and speak to us and tell us who's your pick for Agbeko versus Mares happening this Saturday at the Hard Rock Casino. Love to hear it, and maybe help me out figure out who I'm going to pick. Right now, I'm not sure, man, who I'm going to pick on that fight. If you want to talk about anything else in boxing, you sure can. You know we don't talk anything else but boxing here on Leaving the Ring. We don't talk MMA. We don't talk TMZ type of stuff. We just talk strictly boxing here on Leaving the Ring. So I really want to hear your guys' thoughts. Phone lines will be open. We should have Joseph Agbeko as soon as Gabriel clicks back over and tells us that he's on. So we'll wait for that there a little bit. Hey, I'm really curious about finding out what people think about Kimbo Slice. He's coming back. I mean, he's not coming back, but he's thinking of coming to our side, you know, of the sport and have a debut as a debut in the heavyweight division and see how he runs with it. You know, trying to be a pro fighter. He didn't do too well in his MMA debut. You know, he was doing fine. He was getting in, put in with some softies. But as soon as they put him in with somebody that could really hold up to his punches and wrestle him down, we saw what happened. But, you know, with Kimbo coming into the boxing world, you know, definitely they're going to be giving him some tomato cans. They're not going to give him right away the real deal kind of guys. I think they want to see exactly where he's at. But I'm just wondering how some fight fans are feeling about him doing that transition, trying to make that transition. You know, I mean, if he does good at one or two fights, which we know he is because that's the name of the game, they're using him as a promotional vehicle. Hey, put him in with Seth Mitchell. I think Seth would have his way with them, you know. There's plenty of names out there, you know. I mean, when we think about the heavyweight division, we think of it being very shallow. The water has been drained out when it comes to the heavyweights. But at the same time, I think about the heavyweight division just being like that because of the Klitschko's, you know, how they make the heavyweight division look. They make it look so easy that we end up sitting back and start saying, well, you know, heavyweights are they're terrible. But in a lot of ways, if you take out the Klitschko's, in my opinion, you take them out, you might have some, you would have some very interesting matchups in the heavyweight division. So, I was reading some. My bad. What happened here, Gabe?
I'm back. Having a little trouble getting a hold of him. I'm going to try him again. I'm just giving you a status. He might be sleeping, man. The hard part is after the final press conference, these guys kind of like they go into hiding. You know, they're kind of done and they're starting to focus in. He didn't sound particularly happy to hear from me, even though he agreed to do a 7 o'clock interview. He didn't seem happy at 6:30. So I'm going to give him a try again. If not, we'll just move on.
Yeah, definitely.
Give it one more shot.
Yeah, no problem, man. You know, that's what happens when we have a live show. It's happened to us numerous times where we can't seem to get a hold of the fighter, you know. And then, you know, also, too, it's so close to the fight, only 2 days away. And anyways, 2 days away, I'm just reading some texts and Twitter reads that people are sending to us here on Leaving the Ring. That what's up, Gabe?
I'm back, and I'm alone.
sounds like you're every Saturday night, buddy.
Wow. I just set myself up.
you know, that's the good thing about being good friends is that when you leave that door open, hey, the wind's going to come in.
I'm back. I'm going to put that on a T-shirt. I'm back, and I'm alone.
And I'm alone, exactly. Get the fish head. I'm here. And I'm alone. Two more beers. I remember we used to go, me and my brother used to go to the, you know, our local pub and sit there and say, poor me, poor me, poor me another, that is.
This is not gonna affect my pick of Joseph Agbeko for him ducking me on the phone. I'm not gonna hold it against him. I understand. Morris was the same thing. We tried to get Morris today, and they're just all, you know, it's game time. We're focused in. We don't want to talk anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, and I
get that.
I respect that. You know what I mean? It's game time, and I got my game face on, and that just tells me a little bit more about that match. It actually makes it a little bit more difficult for me to pick even more now.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Thanks so much. Yeah.
I was talking about, when you were dialing out of Beckham.
Here's Joseph Agbeko.
Oh, great.
Hang on a second. I'll be right back.
All right. So we are going to get Joseph out of Beckham. Because for a minute I was going to say maybe he has some back problems. Maybe he can't reach to pick up the phone. I don't know. But I was wrong. Or maybe he's calling back, Gable. All right. Here we go. We're back.
Yes. We're here with IBF Bantamweight title holder Joseph King Kong Agbeko. Welcome to the show, Joseph. And this is my co-host here, David Duenas. And I'm Gabriel Montoya, to remind you again. Welcome.
Thank you.
Joseph, Dave? Really, really quick, you know, because the big concern right now about your fight, and first off, the way you fight, man, is very appealing. You know, we made some comparisons saying that you remind us of Azuma Nelson in a lot of ways, because the way you come to fight, you know, don't have the Kalate style or Corte style, you know, which is, sit back and wait. You don't wait. You don't wait for opportunities. You create the opportunities. Mm-hmm. But the thing that some of us were talking about was the back. Has there been any problems? Has there been the back issue like what had happened for the postponement?
No. After I went through my therapy, there's no any problem. I'm clean. I'm fit. I'm strong, and it has never been okay again. So I'm fine.
I know. I've had that injury. We talked in L.A. At the press conference, and there's a period where after you kind of heal, you're still not sure of your back. You feel a little maybe tender, or you feel a twinge of something every now and again. How long did it take for you to get to a point where you're just confident in your body and not even thinking about it?
It took me 4 weeks to get back to the gym. So after getting back, that's never happened again. I feel never fine. My body is good, you know.
I'm curious, we were talking about Azuma Nelson and your style. Where does your style come from? Was there a particular fighter that you looked up to growing up or that you tried to emulate?
I look at a lot of fighters. I learned from every fighter. I watch a lot of fights, so if I see something good, I just pick it and add it to my style.
Do you feel at this point in your career that, I don't know if you've noticed this, but like a lot of people looked at the fight that when it was originally scheduled as a 50-50 fight. Then you hurt your back, and it seems like people are kind of leaning more towards Abner Morris because of that. Do you get that sense that you've suddenly shifted to an underdog in this fight, or do you even think about that kind of stuff?
The judge doesn't think about that. Underdog or no underdog, my duty is to get into the ring and do my job. So the fans are not going to fight for Abner Morris. They're not going to throw the punch for him. He's going to throw his punch, and he's going to take my punch. So I don't care about that.
Now, when you think of Abner Morris, which is a very young guy coming into this matchup with you, but strong, and Joseph, and you've been successful with guys that decide to put pressure on you. Is that what you're expecting from here, is solely pressure coming against you? Hello? Joseph, you there?
Pressure as well. Joseph is ready to take any pressure.
I think his phone. You think your phone's kind of breaking up there.
Yeah.
I said I'm ready to take any pressure that he's going to bring, and I'm ready to give him another chance. Well,
what kind of fight do you think favors you? A brawl or more of a boxing match? Or are you prepared to just do whatever happens?
I depend on the opponent. It depends on the opponent.
It depends on how the fight begins, or do you mean depends on the openings that are given to you by his?
It depends on the fighter that I'm fighting.
Hmm.
Gotcha.
Now, Joseph, when you fought Yanni Perez the first time, you went in with a puncher's mentality. Looking back at that, and when you watched it after the loss, what was your thoughts? What were you thinking? Did you beat yourself for doing that? Because it looked like it was just the wrong game plan for you.
Yeah, of course, it was the wrong game plan for me, and I had a short notice for the fight as well, so I wasn't fully prepared, I couldn't really, put up the best ever performance for me. And so with the headbutt issue that he gave me headbutt and I stopped and the referee counted me, it also went against me. So a few things went against me and that made me lose.
Now, when you faced him in the rematch, were you surprised that Perez decided to stick to the same game plan he beat you the first time? Or were you expecting him to do the same things?
After fighting for the first time, I know him. I know everything that he can do and things that he cannot do. So I came up with a plan that I know he can never beat that plan.
You seemed kind of rejuvenated in that fight, too, in the rematch. Like you,
yeah.
You figured something out that you did. You'd remembered something, or because you just seemed like you were back in your, the style that beat Darchinian and that got you your first title belt. What was it that was different? Do you think it was just you had better preparation? Did the title kind of go to your head a little bit, and you maybe took Perez lightly the first time? What was it that was different in that rematch for you? Was it mental?
Yeah, mentally, the rematch, I wanted to be a champion for a very long time. So after losing to him, I realized he has cut my dream short. So I went back, like a hungry lion to get my title back from him.
I was actually there when you won your title up in Sacramento. I remember it's actually one of my favorite boxing memories because you never actually came out for the press conference afterwards. Don King said that anytime they'd send somebody back to your dressing room, all they could hear was loud cheering and the occasional somebody yelling, Donna, and everybody getting very excited. Tell me about that night. I never got a chance to talk to you. What was it like winning your first title? And I think it was your second fight in the U.S.
My first title fight was the second fight, my second fight in the U.S., and I was happy. It was a dream come true, and I work hard for that, and I grab it with my both hands.
Is it harder to keep it or to get it? Sorry, Dave.
No problem.
Come again?
Is it harder to get the title or to keep it?
It's harder to keep it.
Yeah, definitely.
Why is that? Just because everybody's after you?
It's harder to keep it because everybody wants that belt. Everybody's after you. Everybody training to your star, So everybody's working so hard to take it from you, so it puts more pressure on you. So you have to really stand firm and be able to keep it for long.
When it comes to Morris here, Joseph, when you watch him and you're watching tapes of him or anything, is he bringing anything, something that you haven't seen? I mean, is there anything there that you're looking at going, okay, I have to be concerned about this?
I don't think he can bring anything that I haven't seen from him before. I know he trying to be aggressive, but which I think he's not. And also, like to run sometimes. He likes to box sometimes, but not to box a kind of boxer like me. He can box the fighters, but not to box me. So I don't know what he's gonna bring anyway, but I'm ready for anything that he's gonna bring.
Now you said you think he's gonna, that he's aggressive, but you don't think he is. What did you mean by that?
He tries to be aggressive. He tries to throw a lot of punches and then push himself to come on you, hold you, and stuff. Trying to, work himself, which I don't think he is.
You don't think he's comfortable doing that, but he tries to force himself to do that?
I think he working his way to be like that, but I don't think inside his heart he's like that. He's happy like that.
Looking to the future, I know you don't want to look past Mars, but I'm curious. You've had quite a few title defenses. You've already won a belt in this division, and if you win this, you'll unify at least one other belt. Do you want to stay at 118? Do you want to move up in weight?
I really want to move by one more fight or two at 118 before moving up.
How important is this fight for Ghana? I mean, for your fans out there.
Very, very, very important. You know, right now there's no champion in Ghana apart from me. So all their hope is in me, and they're all depending on me to bring back the title. So it's very, very important for Ghana, and it's very, very important for me too.
Now, in the past, you know, when it comes to fighters over there, they've held a big screen for the people out there. Are they doing that for your fight?
Yeah, they're doing it for my fans.
Fantastic, you know. You know, Joseph, I got one more question. I don't know if Gabe has any more for you, but my last question for you is, what are you expecting the most out of yourself in this fight? Because I think a lot of people are thinking that you finally peaked out. Like, your last fight with Perez is probably the best you're going to become. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like no? You haven't seen the full King Kong yet?
Definitely, they haven't seen the full King Kong yet. I've got a lot that they haven't seen. So as time goes on, they will see the real King Kong.
There you go. Gabe, you got anything else?
No, I'm actually good. Well, thank you so much, Joseph. I know it's on the eve of the fight, eve of the weigh-in, and it's a tough time to call in for us or to our show. But I really appreciate you taking the time out to do so. And always a pleasure to talk to you, and good luck in the fight.
Yeah, good luck there, brother.
See you Saturday. Take care.
You know, well, definitely a confident Joseph Arbeco. You know, very mellow, very mellow. And it shows you the temperament of how he, of a person he is, where he transitions to the way he is in the ring as well. You know, you could kind of see it. And a lot of times, if you're a hyper kind of guy, you're going to show it in the ring. You know, if you're, you know, over the top kind of guy, like Mayorga, you're going to show it in the ring. You know, but if you're a laid-back guy like Chad Dawson, you're going to show that definitely in the ring. And Arbeco just shows that he's a confident warrior, and he has history that backs him up. You know what I mean? He has history of warriors that come from Ghana to the United States to back him up, you know. And a lot of times, I think this wave's a little bit heavier sometimes for fighters that come across the pond, you know, the sea or the pond to the States, because they come with more at risk and pride when they step into that ring. And you know, Modis is going to have his hands full, but I'm going to give you my pick, man. I think we have enough, you know, to really sit back and say who we think is going to win this Saturday night at the Hard Rock Casino. You know, Sal, who's Saul, our boxing, our fight junkie, who writes for Leaving the Ring and covers a lot of the Southern California and Las Vegas fights for Leaving the Ring. I just want to give him a quick shout out. He had a passing in the family. He's not going to be able to attend, so we're going to send Jaime Estrada in the replacement for him at the fight. So, you know, Saul, if you're listening, brother, our condolences and our prayers go out to you. At the same time, in the UK, man, some tragedies have been happening, riots, there's been deaths. Some senseless deaths happening out there. I also want to send out our condolences out there to our UK listeners. I hope you stay safe, stay home, you know, and stay away from that nonsense that's happening out there on the streets of London, I believe, you know. But and if my co-host wants to add to anything to that, you know, he certainly can.
Yeah, well, also, just seeing it on Twitter that Scott Ledoux passed away. So, you know, our condolences go out to him. Always a favorite. Always like listening to him. Hearing what he had to say, but I want to hear your, pick. Dave.
I was trying to get around that.
I know. It was funny. That Joseph said. One of my favorite pickup lines is, you know, you haven't seen the full King Kong yet.
And I think that's going to come into play here in this fight.
That's we haven't seen the perfect pickup line at the fish head, buddy. You know?
Yeah. Have you seen the full King Kong? I'm sorry?
You haven't seen it yet. Haven't seen the full King Kong yet there. You know, but go back to what you were saying, brother.
That's what she said, no. So wait, you haven't. Anyway.
That's why you end up going to Home Alone on Saturday nights, you know?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. The flies, yeah. Shopping for one. Yeah, dinner for one.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Let's pick our picks.
Let's get serious here. I'll leave it.
I'm having to smoke outside, so I can't see the fight schedule until I'm done with it. But I'm curious. You know, I think all the evidence is out. I don't think we can break it down any further. Who you got?
I got Morris, man. I got to tell you. I'm going to tell you why. You know, every fighter is going to give you the good talk, and every fighter is going to come in confident. And in this level of competition, of professionalism in boxing, you're always going to have the same, you know, answer to a question, which is, I'm good, I'm 100%. But when he told me 4 weeks he was out of the ring, that's 4 weeks of not being active. That's 4 weeks of coming back in and another 2 weeks of getting back, or maybe a week of getting your gears oiled. It takes time away of preparation for the fight, okay? And it takes time away from of your focus. That means you got to refocus yourself. The fire has dimmed a little bit in this match here. But when it comes with Morris, this was a guy that stayed in the gym, who stayed consistent, who was still sparring even after the announcement. You know, he was still running. He was still getting back in there, and he was keeping himself busy. And the great part of being in Southern California, you can keep yourself busy. The only way I can see Morris not being successful in this fight is that he overdid it, okay? Or he's coming in with an injury, or he's just coming in with a different game plan, as in, I can knock this guy out. I don't think Morris can do that. I don't think he's going to be in the mind frame of doing that, but I think what he's going to do is he's going to be intelligent. And the one thing I did like, what Abeko said was that Morris is not aggressive, and he doesn't believe he's aggressive. And I believe that's true. He doesn't believe he's aggressive. And I think this time around coming in, he's not going to come in aggressive. He's going to come in being effective with his punches. Rather than push the limit of trying to be the bigger man like he did with Victor Chinian, he's going to understand Adebeko is a big man too, and he's got to box intelligent. I see Adnan Morris just being successful in a very tough back-and-forth fight, but at the long run, I think that back injury is just going to, you know, surface, and you're going to see Joseph Adebeko getting, you know, I know he's not that old, but he's going to end up looking 30 years old while Adnan Morris stays looking fresh 25.
I see a tight fight. You know, my initial instinct is that it's going to be very, very close and kind of a tale of two halves. I think you're right. I think Morris is going to box early and then maybe take it to him late. You know, for me, there's nothing really clear here. I think it's going to be a really tough fight to score. And I think Vegas judges tend to favor volume over quality a lot of times.
Right,
and I think possibly in this fight we could see that. Although, you know, I do like the work of Morris to the body. I think he's, you know, a very well-rounded fighter. My gut is just kind of leaning, as the week has gone on, back to Adebeko, back to my original pick, and when this first fight was made. And you know, I second-guessed myself on Monday, and I think I rushed it a little bit. And looking at it, if the back holds up, and I tend to think that it has. To me, you know, a guy getting right back in there, you know, Morris might, it could go two ways. He could either have overtrained or he wasn't quite ready that first time, and I think there were some doubts. It seems like the Espinosa is a lot more confident this time around. This camp, they see something new in Morris, and they really like what they see.
Right.
I have a gut feeling about Adebeko, and so, you know, but maybe this is hedging my bets, but I think it's going to be a fight that's going to be very close, that Adebeko's going to feel he won. But I think Morris is going to get the decision.
You know, that first time around, when they were going to do it. You're going with Adebeko, right? Yeah.
I'm going with Morris, but I think that everybody's going to come away. Some people are going to come away saying Adebeko won. But I think that, and I feel like Adebeko can win the fight, but
just the way the Vegas judges go with things, I think that Morris is probably going to be the more busy guy, the guy that's going to be looking like he's doing something, whereas I think Agbeko is going to be looking to find him for a lot of the first half of the fight and lose some of those early rounds. So I think Morris takes a close decision, even though my gut is still saying Agbeko, but I just have a feeling that everything's leaning towards Morris right now. I know that's a really soft pick. I guess I should say I'm picking Jabner Magbeko, you know, just because I'm not really being very clear. But I think it's Morris by close decision, but it's going to be, you know, one that maybe we wouldn't want to see a rematch of.
You know, I'm hoping it's like that. I'm hoping that there's some type of controversy. I know we hate that. Those type of fights, but there are some fights that leave us wanting a little bit more, and I'm thinking that Beko and Morris may do that because it's just so close a niche of skill level, so close a niche of two of these guys are really coming to win. These are not you really don't have a guy that's out the door in here. You have a guy that has been around a little longer, but he still's got a lot to prove, not just to himself, but to the fight game. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's harder to keep the title, and I think that's what he's fighting right now, is to keep that title, where Morris is really coming to really engrave who he is in the bantamweight right now. So I got to lean with Morris just that tad. And let me tell you this, it's a nose hair. And for my opinion, it's a nose hair for me to pick Morris, because if somebody right now calls in and tells me a little bit different and could convince me, it could change my mind. But I'm telling you right now, the first time this fight was matched up, I had Agbeko. The second time around, I'm having Morris, you know. And never know, even maybe Saturday night, right when that bell rings, I might change my mind again, because it's just that close, you know. It's that close of a horse race between these two guys, you know.
It really is. I mean, it's one of those that I've had people ask me, you know, like betting guys, like, who you got? I'm like, look, don't waste your money on my pick. I wouldn't put money on this fight. Maybe because, you know, if I was a gambler and the odds were that tight, you know, there's money to be made here. But I don't feel safe in any pick, really. You know, I just don't. And that's, to me, what great boxing is all about, is when it's really close like this. And to me, I'm just like, really, all I'm really hoping for is a hell of a fight. Because the last time I went to Vegas, you know, for Judah and Amir Khan, it's not what I got. You know,
right.
Not the exact opposite of what I was hoping for. And, you know, not for my pick to be right, but just for a good fight. This time around, I think that's exactly what we're going to get. I think it could be a tactical fight, very much kind of a high-level chess match. But I think played, you know, with power, with speed and intelligence and nice technique, it's not going to be two guys unwilling to risk. I think both guys, you know, that's a huge difference mentally for Agbeko, is that he understands what it's like to get a title and to lose it, to regain it. And he understands that's the exact right answer. It's harder to keep it than it is to get it. And
right.
I think whether he wants to admit it or not, that maybe, you know, he took things a little bit lightly that first time with Perez and understood what he did wrong, corrected it. That's pretty huge, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's a big difference between Yanni Perez and even kind of a, you know, an older Victor Chinian, who's, I don't think, really a 118-pounder, as much as he thinks he can go up to, you know, 135 or whatever.
Right.
There's a big difference. Abner's a real bantamweight and a guy that probably can move up in weight a couple classes and handle that.
Exactly.
I think that might be a little bit of the difference there, too, you know. Whereas Agbeko, I think he can move up, but at his late age, you know, I don't see him being, like, rejuvenated and, okay, now he's at 122. This is the real King Kong. I think he really is just a full bantamweight, you know. And so there's going to be that as well. Again, just tough close fight, and I can't wait. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, definitely. My fans, you want to call in.
I don't think we've seen the full Abner Morris either. You know,
no.
Maybe haven't seen the full King Kong. We haven't seen the full Abner. So.
I think we've seen the full King Kong. I mean, I have to admit, I think we've seen the best of what we're going to get from Joseph Agbeko. There's only a few times where we were proven wrong in that department there. But with Morris, I could definitely put money on, we have not seen the full fledge of who Abner Morris really is. You know, fight fans, you want to call in right now to leave in the ring, you surely can. 347-215-7598. Now, let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk a little bit about this weekend fight or Adner Morris and Adebeko or anything else that involves boxing. And then we'll get to our fight schedule. We only got about another 25 minutes here on leaving the ring, and then we're all out of 3 hours of boxing talk. So let's patch in Leon, who wants to talk about last week's Friday night fights. What's up, brother? What's on your mind?
What's going on, guys, man? What a hell of a fight last weekend, man. I was actually out in Vegas, and I was listening to your podcast, and I'm like, man, I gotta make it to that fight, man, because I heard Tim Coleman and Vernon Paris was, like, going back and forth.
Right.
Man, I did not expect what I saw on Friday night, man. I saw those debilitating body shots start to take their effect, man, and Paris eventually, you know, got him out of there. So, I mean, if that is the case, and, you know, I heard Tim Coleman talking about that he believed that that Vernon Forrest got, I guess he got banned or got some type of thing done because he was doing some type of crack or marijuana. I guess
right.
He had a good batch that night because he came out to win.
He definitely got a good batch that night. And that batch was a bunch of body shots, you know. I don't know if you could smoke that or what, but you could definitely land them when it's at the right moment and the right time. And that's what Tim Coleman. If anything, Tim should sit back and say, hey, I got a good bag of body shots, you know. You know, give or take anything away from these guys. These guys showed some athleticism and professionalism when they stepped into that ring. You know, and I know that Tim said, look, any chance I get, if I'm arm distance away from him, I'm going to take a swing. I don't know whether if that's changed or not. I still like to get Tim Coleman or Paris back on the line to talk about that feud that has started on Facebook. But a great fight. I'm hoping that it continues the streak. I'm going to call it the curse of the Friday night fights. I hope it continues. You know what I mean? On Friday night fights.
I wonder if you pulled up the corner.
You guys, did you hear anything about Paris?
I got that body shot,
yo.
What was that?
Did you hear anything about Paris? Because I saw a little vignette he did on YouTube after the fight, and I guess he was calling out Amir Khan and Zab Judah and all those people. Have you heard anything else about him? About him stepping in with anybody else? Or?
No, I think he just needs to sit back a little bit. I mean, calling out the other guys, it's it's always good. You got a good ultra high in the fight, and you lived it up to the hype. I mean, that's the one thing I think we were saying on Leaving the Ring, we were like, hey, we just hope that the hype, you know, leads into the ring, you know. But when you get that, these two guys, you know, Paris, you still got to do a little bit more to convince us that you're in that elite level. You know what I mean? I don't know. Gabe, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you beat Tim Coleman, but, you know, Tim Coleman's no Tim Bradley. He's not Amir Khan. I think Paris has got the skill set to get it done. But, you know, there's still more questions. There's still things we need to know about him. Can you be consistent, you know?
Yeah.
That's probably a main thing. You know, let's do it again, you know. Let's step up again. So, I don't know. We'll see. You know, I think it's way too soon for those kind of things. And I don't think Amir Khan's looking at him. You know, he's looking at
the big mega fights out there. Leon, I put you on hold, brother. Thanks for calling in because we got to get to our fight schedule. But, you know, and then we also got to let other fight fans call in if they want to call in 347-215-7598. And then that's the end of our show here. But, hey, I was talking about Kimbo Slice here, Gabe. I wanted to get your opinion about him trying to do his boxing debut. You know, and I'm not really sure if it's this Friday that's going to be on ESPN. I can't find anything about it right now. I haven't even looked, to tell you the truth. I'm lying here. I haven't even looked to see if it is. But let's get to that fight schedule, and then we'll talk a little bit about Kimbo Slice.
I have no opinion about Kimbo Slice. I think he's just publicity stunt, quite honestly. I think it's... You know, it's not shameful or anything. It's not a detriment to the sport. But, I mean, come on. He's just kind of a tough-looking butterbean, you know. I think if you put him in, I'm not even sure what weight class he'd be in. I think maybe he's a heavyweight. But
I
think a Seth Mitchell would kill him right now, would absolutely just destroy him. I don't see him. There's nothing about him that says to me he's going to be a successful heavyweight fighter. I think Chris Areola ices him. I think Seth Mitchell ices him. I think anybody worth a damn ices him. I just don't.
Eddie Chambers.
To me, I think it's a waste of
Eddie Chambers'
airspace.
Exactly.
I think it's
waste of airspace. It's one of those things. I mean, I understand when like Bob Arum puts on, you know, used to put on Butterbean, you know, on his undercards, or you know, they had Mia St. John or Christy Martin, you know, who were, you know, people that did things in their sport, but they're kind of part of the promotion to grab a certain demographic. And I get that with Kimbo. He's kind of a name. You can kind of promote him. But he's a novelty act, in my opinion. He's not...
Exactly.
You know, we don't even know how old the guy is, really. You know, I think he's much older than they say. I just... There's nothing about his skill set that says, you know, I think this guy could make a run. I think you put him in with, like, David Tua, and Tua eyes him at this point.
Oh.
He's, you know, or like Monty Two Guns Barrett. It's just, you know, those guys are fighting this.
Put him in with Bobby Gunn, who just fought on the knuckle, the first bare knuckles this past weekend in Arizona. You know, he iced Thompson in three rounds. Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's where Kimbo started off his fighting, you know, in the streets on YouTube.
Yeah.
Put him back where he started from. I mean, I don't know. I say
yeah.
if he does well with one or two, which you know he is. You know, which you know he
yeah.
is. Then put him in with Seth Mitchell. Let Seth,
yeah.
You know, get another first round KO.
He got, you know, remember they switched out his opponent to another guy that had a little more experience.
Right.
In his big debut, and he got blown out in like a minute. You know, if you can't handle those guys' stand up game, what are you gonna do with a boxer? You know, I mean, I guess they could comb the Midwest for, you know, the ghost of Ty Fields and maybe prop him up and have Kimbo blow on him and knock him over. But I just don't see it. You know, I'd have to see something impressive in order to change my opinion. I hate to be so down on the guy, but I have no reason to be up. So let me get to the fight schedule here.
Okay.
And this is a fight we haven't even really talked about. August 12th, Friday, 2011, at the Family Arena in St. Charles, Missouri. Kermit Cintron, 32-4-1, versus Antoine Smith, 22-1. This is an interesting fight. We had
it is
Johnny
an interesting
on,
fight.
His trainer on a couple weeks back, and I'll actually transcribe it, and the interview will be up on Max Boxing tonight. This is do or die for Kermit. You know, and granted, Antoine Smith, somebody, a reader of mine corrected me, they watched the next round, and I said, you know, if he can't beat Antoine Smith, then he has no business. And maybe that's selling Antoine Smith a little short, just like we kind of, I think, sell Carlos Molina a little bit short, and that we don't talk more about how good he was in the fight. We only talk about how bad Kermit Cintron was in that fight. But,
yeah.
But you know, at the same time, Antoine, is, you know, he's a good fighter. He's a kind of a spoiler, always brought in as an underdog, and then he ends up winning. He had that hiccup against, it was Leonardo Tyner. But apparently he had a flu going into that fight and was legitimately sick, and that's why all of a sudden he just looked kind of terrible. I don't think he's, you know, he's been active. He had one fight this year. I think he's still another tough fight for Kermit Cintron, and I think it's good that he's coming back and being active. The big question for me is the mental. Does he, like we had talked about it with Ronnie, you know, a guy could physically be great, you know, and you know, I was talking to Victor Conte this week, and we were talking about Zab Judah. It's like, you know, it's proof positive. You can build a machine that looks great, but ultimately the fighter has to go there and fight. And with Kermit, he looks fine. He looks in shape. But what's going on upstairs? I think that's the big question. I picked Smith in this fight. You know, I have trouble picking Kermit to win this one. You know, I feel bad for doing that because, but it's, you know, look at the evidence. He didn't look good in his last fight. Maybe it was a layoff, but I have a feeling it was something else.
Well, the thing for me is this, is that if you look at this fight here with Antoine Smith and Kermit Cintron, you know, Kermit having that layoff after, you know, Paul Williams in 2010, he comes back in, and he comes back in with a tough and game Carlos Molina, you know, and that from his first fight. Within itself, you gotta look at it going, you know, they matched him wrong. They didn't match him right. You know, they just went for the gusto. And with Antoine Smith here, is this is a guy that also, you know, lost in 2010, was KO'd in the ninth round, just like what you mentioned. But then they put him back in, you know, in 2000, in the same year. And he was productive and he was successful. You know, his last fight he had a TKO. But the layoff here, you know, and that was in January of 2011, which is a 7-month layoff. So we got two guys that have a pretty long distance of layoff. You know, Kermit's a little bit longer. But with Smith, I think with Smith is that this is my concern is, does Smith come in thinking, okay, this guy's done, he's over with, and comes in partially prepared, not fully prepared, you know? And does Kerman really, does he really shake off that ring rust that we saw with Carlos Molina, or was that the truth of him just being damaged goods and he's no longer the killer, you know? So to me is, who is really going to be who on that Friday night, tomorrow night? Who's going to be really who? Is Smith is going to come to take advantage of being on ESPN on the headline and showing, like, look, I'm the real deal? Or is Kermit going to come and show that, don't count me out just yet. I'm here, and I'm ready to do my job. And my trainer had it right all along. You know, it was just a bad night for me with Carlos Molina. I'm going to lean with Kermit Cintron. You know, I know I'm not taking anything away from Smith. He's a good fighter, you know. But going looking at his last two wins, you sit there and you go like, okay, that was okay, but big deal.
Yeah.
Kermit's really been competitive. And with Carlos Molina, I think Carlos Molina, we're undermining what he's done and who he's fought. And what, I mean, this kid is the real deal. And I think that was a terrible matchup for Kermit Cintron. I think Antoine Smith should have been that combat fight for him in the beginning, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I got Kermit.
Maybe it's pretty rare that the Top Rank kind of takes a misstep, and I think I think both Golden Boy and Top Rank took a misstep in picking Carlos Molina. He's a guy that's just rising, you know, and I think you look at him and go, kind of ordinary guy. He's going to be a Mexican come forward fighter, and he's a lot shiftier than people give him credit for. Smith is that kind of guy too, though. He's pretty scrappy in there. I think if anything, it's just going to be a good fight. And I'm curious to see how much of what Ronnie Shields told Cintron, which was, this is your championship. This is your career right here. You either win or it's over. It's done. How much of that has Kermit taken to heart? I think it was kind of a positive sign to me, even though I couldn't get the interview, that I kept trying to get a hold of Kermit, who usually texts me right back. I couldn't get a hold of him during training camp. Especially like this last 2 weeks, I was really, really trying to get him, and I couldn't. So I ended up using my Ronnie Shields interview, but to talk about the fight.
Right.
I take that as a good sign that he's focused in, he knows what he needs to do, and he's going to go do it. So we'll see. Underneath that is Danny Williams, 18-1 versus Antonio Cervantes, 16-5-5. Don't really know anything about either of these guys, so. But they've been getting it right on ESPN Friday Night Fights this year, like every week. So I expect them to be getting it right with that matchup. at the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, on Telefutura, Antonio Diaz, 6-1 versus Ernesto Zepeda, 39-14-4. In support, Andrew Cancio, 10-1-2 versus Lowell Brownfield, 11-7-1. It's a parade of fighters I've never heard of. But other than, you know, Antonio Diaz, I've read a little bit about Ernesto Zepeda. I think looking at his record, he's kind of a guy there to be beaten by Diaz. But Diaz has been off for a while, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's always a crapshoot with an older fighter what that does to you. Did he replenish himself, or, you know, is he going to come back rusty? He hasn't fought, I believe, since 2009 December when he fought Victor Ortiz and lost.
Right.
So we'll see. Is his face going to hold up? Is he going to get cut again? Because that's how the fight ended with Ortiz. I don't know. You know, I'm not really going to make a pick in that one. I just don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I tend to think that Diaz is going to pull it out just because Zepeda just looks like such an opponent.
He is an opponent. I mean, he lost his last three fights, in 2010.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the only way to me. Antonio Diaz, who's trying to get himself back in there. You know, I know he was calling out. He was even saying that he can move down to 140.
He's been a lightweight for most of his career too. You know, it's only been like the last few fights he's been a welterweight. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's just trying to make his last run And this is the best way of doing it, is putting a dead body rather than a live body in there with him. But that ring rust, too, is just it's the same thing. You know, I mean, ESPN is putting two guys that have been inactive, and now Solo Boxeo is doing the same thing. They're, like, kind of mimicking each other for a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Zepeda, he's got some names, you know, like really old Cesar Bazan, Demetrius Hopkins he lost to. That says a lot. You know, he lost to Matthew Hatton, Mark Mulligan, and Jesus Babon. Those are his last three fights, all losses. That says everything to me. I mean, you know, and then he's been off since August of last year. Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of safe to say it, but at the same time, with a guy like Diaz, you know, we'll see, you know. Saturday at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada on Showtime. The finals of the bantamweight tournament for Showtime. Joseph Agbeko, 28-2 versus Abner Maras, 21-0-1. Both Dave and I are picking Maras. I'm picking him. I'm kind of picking Agbeko, but I'm picking Maras to get the decision. So I'm picking Jabner Magbeko. Underneath that is support Eric Morrell, Warren Browning, Louis Ramos, David Rodella, Carlos Molina versus Joshua Alati, Angelo Santana versus Jesse Carradine. It should be, you know, an action-packed card. I'm a little scared of seeing Eric Morrell just because I don't find them action-packed at all. At the Bally's Atlantic City in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on Fox Sports that same night. This is actually kind of a cool little card. Tion Kennedy, 17-0-1 versus Alejandro Lopez, 21-2. I really like Tion Kennedy, man. His last fight was really an all-out war. The guy just comes and he brings it. I'm picking him to win, probably by late stoppage. But I think it's going to be an exciting action fight. I think just both styles are going to mesh really well.
Yeah, I agree.
And then you got Carl Dargan, who's not really the most active fighter in the world. But every time I see him, I like him. I just don't understand why he fights seemingly so sporadically. You know, like Fight Night Club a few times. And he fought, you know, once this year, he fought back in May. But, you know, only two times last year. He fought a lot in 2009. But for a guy that's only got, you know, nine fights and he's 26 years old, they really need to step it up with him. But he's fighting an opponent in Juan Sazo. So, you know, I think he'll come out with the win. At the Gold Coast Convention Center in Broad Beach, Australia, Michael Katsidis, 27-4. Versus Michael Lozado, 38-8-1. This is just a tune-up fight, but you know, I think Katsidis, if anybody deserves a tune-up fight, it's him, dude.
Right.
You know, the guy just—I think he might be swelling right now just thinking about the fight. So I'm picking him to win. I think it's just a homecoming. Underneath that is Nestor Rocha, 23-2 versus Jack Assas, 23-18-4. I wonder who's going to win that fight. And then you got Jared Fletcher, who's a really nice-looking prospect out of Australia. He's 8-1, or 8-0, rather, versus Arnel Tanampe, 14-13-1. Yeah, another kind of stay-busy fight. And then this is kind of the Hall of Fame tour, or the old-timers tour. At the Telstra's Clear Pacific Arena in Manukau City, New Zealand, David Tuaman Tua, 52-3-2 versus Monty Two Guns Barrett, 34-9-2. This is kind of a weird one. Who you got in this? Well, they fought to a draw before. It wasn't that good of a fight. I don't know. You know, Monty Barrett said he's given up sex for the last 8 weeks, and something he rarely ever does, or rarely ever has to do, apparently. Good on you, Monty. But, you know, David Tua, it's hard to say. He seems kind of edgy, ready to go. I'm just going to toss a coin and say David Tua. I don't know. What do you got? Oh, you also got at the Deportivo in Mexico, Salvador Sanchez the second coming, 24-4-3 versus Adan Garcia, 15-4-1. And that pretty much is your weekend fight schedule. There's a lot of other fights going on, but those are pretty much the ones that are notable.
Well, there you go. Our weekend fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. And like always, Gabriel breaks it down and gives us our picks of what's going to happen. Everybody, if you're going to go out to Las Vegas to see the fight, be careful. And if you're watching it at home, remember, don't drink and drive. And if you want to make your pick, if you're catching this on the archives, but you want to make your pick or any fight, you can always go to our 24-hour boxing hotline at 323-354-14. Tomorrow we are definitely going to be posting the calls. You know, we've had tons and tons of calls. We've just been going through them. To tell you the truth, been going through them and trying to find them. And a lot of them are really good, man. There's a lot of people calling in, giving some great, great questions or giving some great analyzing the fights, the way they're doing it, man. Like I said, in boxing, I never see ourselves as experts. I see ourselves as spectators of the sport. But other than that, hey, another great night on Leaving the Ring. It's always fun, like always, being here and having the opportunity that you guys give us, me and myself, and Gabriel and Dave Chen, a chance to talk boxing. I want to thank everybody that tuned in. I want to thank the guests that came on. I want to thank my co-host. I want to thank my producer, Dave Chen, our sponsor, MyBoxingFan.com, and everybody else. Again, till next week, you guys have a great night.
If you want to see the full King Kong, make sure to buy me a drink in Vegas, and maybe, just maybe, you'll be able to see it. Dave, as always, it's a pleasure, and I'll give you a call from Vegas after the fights.
There you go, brother. And I don't know if I even gave that number out. 323-300-5414 is the Boxing 24-Hour Hotline. So if you can't get enough of talking boxing, you can't get enough. You go ahead and call that number and get your voice out there and just let it out, let it loose, man. Let it go. You know, and pretend it's the fish head. You know, where the what is it? The where the people drink like fish and the women look like they're out of water. Have a good night.
Wow. All right.